Blog Talk Radio.
Absolutely. It's July 19th, 2013, and this is The Last Word coming to you from beautiful, beautiful Charlotte. 88 degrees. It's sunny. It's beautiful. I feel better. My heart's jumping out of my chest, though, but I got some pills to keep it.
That's because you had a nice vacation there, Mike.
Yeah, but I you know, it's still fluttering. I'm seeing my tremors in my hands, putting in my contact lenses. All this medication is just driving me nuts. He said, but you know, I have something I want to tell you. And this is Michael Lawson with Thomas Fortenberry. And we're going to be with you for another 55 minutes. How about that?
Amazing.
I should say 2 hours and 55 minutes.
That would be the shortest show ever.
Now, I have a daily thought for you.
A daily thought for me, okay. Before we get into all this.
Before we get into anything, you need a daily thought. Some people are like Slinkies. Not really good for anything, but they bring a smile to your face when you push them down the stairs.
That's just mean.
But how about this?
But do they sing the song as they fall?
Yeah, Slinky, Slinky. But there's one other thing. Serious thought I want to get to you. Fate or some mysterious force can put the finger on you and me for no good reason at all.
Hey, that's exactly why all this universal spying makes me nervous.
Absolutely. By the way, that was from the film noir classic, Detour.
Detour.
For my cousin who's listening in Canada. With a good health plan.
You know,
free health care.
We talked about, and we were going to actually work on it today, but
yes.
It's been put off a little bit due to vacation, I might add. Some people had to work.
No, hey, listen, but, that was a doctored order.
Yeah. Whatever excuse for. It'll work. No, but you know, we were going to do the superhero show.
Yeah, well, yes. Well, I'm just catching up. I'm just, because I have not, I saw Star Trek.
Hey.
I loved it.
Hey, you like it, huh?
I loved it. And it was, they introduced his future Tris.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? And they did the, now I
yeah,
like,
nice
now,
have the
nobody is as good as Khan, but I tell you what, this guy took Khan to a whole new level.
Oh, yeah.
No, it's like the first Batman with Keaton,
mm-hmm.
Michael Keaton. I think Michael Keaton nailed it. I mean, he nailed it. And none of the other Batman were as good as Michael Keaton.
Really?
Until this guy, Bane. No, not Bane.
Bane was the enemy.
Yeah, Bane. No, until the what's his name? Bale. Until Christian Bale played Batman. It's just like nobody was better than Sean Connery.
Right.
Until
he came back. Never say never again.
Right. But no one was better than, but he did that tongue in cheek. But no one was better than Sean Connery until we have our president.
Mean bulldog.
Woo. Bulldog.
And that is,
I mean, and he took that to a whole new level.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
So, I mean, what's that he said to the guy?
Know.
He says, but you don't have enough kills. He said,
Yeah.
Bang, bang.
By the way. Never point out to an assassin.
Yeah, he don't have enough kills. I mean, this guy's a spy and he's saying that? You don't have a license to kill? Yeah, well, you weren't counting with me.
And also, don't pick on his madam, his ma'am, his mother, surrogate mother.
Oh, yeah.
The big building.
M.
Because,
yeah.
That's a whole new level of
yeah, she took
making
M to another new level, too.
Oh, yeah.
She took...
she's the only ones that she's lasted through several incarnations of Bond.
Well, she lasted more than the original M.
Yeah. I love
she.
Her.
Yeah, oh, yeah,
I
she was
she
yeah.
a great job.
Great job.
And I actually liked, now see, you know, I liked Pierce Brosnan.
No.
I think that Pierce, no. If you go back
to the stature. He's not the stature. You know, even though, he's a little skinny dude. God, forget. He couldn't do half the stuff that this guy can do.
Of course not, but he wasn't supposed to back then.
Yeah, well,
he was the transition, if you look at it. And you go back and watch those.
No,
movies,
Mr. Link, maybe. Not the transition.
That transitioned from the Roger Moore, more lighthearted, you know, silly ones, back to a very hard-bitten, very, you know, violent, very tough Bond.
Yeah.
And his, I mean, look at those ones where, I mean, then, you know, started out with him crossing over to North Korea and getting tortured. All that kind of stuff.
Should have kept him over there in North Korea.
Come on. Those were rough moves. But it was, he was.
Pierce Brosnan and Dalton, Timothy Dalton were, I mean, just a suit.
They were suits.
Who's the guy that's doing it now? What's his name? Who's the one that does it now?
Daniel Craig.
Well, look. Daniel Craig could be as the oxycodone man says, with one hand tied behind him,
yeah.
He could beat them.
Well, yeah, but look, you're getting here's
I mean, he's violent. I mean, these guys, you know, you can look at him and they look at you and say, "Is he really going to do it?" Nah.
You're talking.
When he looks at you, said he's going to do it. You're scared.
But this is exactly the same
thing. And that's what Sean Connery was.
This is exactly the same thing, though, that's going on with the superhero movies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right. Same exact
you
thing.
You have
right.
different variations on the character. Yeah. You know, you have the Batman, you know, and then you have very serious Christian Bale. That's a Dark Knight.
Well, Michael Keaton
Batman.
First, because he was serious.
But he added
Michael Keaton's touch
different.
To it.
Yeah, but they were very different Batmans.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and just like Superman. We've now seen a
third
version.
And he killed the guy. I mean, that
right.
Was,
and this is the guy who. And my problem, we'll talk about this on the thing. You know, I did have some problem with it. I know that he was having to fight Zod, and Zod was a.
I think it took a little too long.
He's a little.
But that's
tyrannical
good.
Dude, and he had to fight back.
Zod was bad.
Zod was bad. But I had a real problem with Superman in the old Superman, the old version. You know, Chris Reeve would stop a fight, put himself in danger, lose the advantage to protect people.
Yes, but you see.
One, he was like blasting through buildings.
But you see, here's the thing. He's still learning what he needs to do. See, when the original Superman came out, we all always knew because they didn't add anything to it. All they did was give us the same Superman with the red belt and yellow red pants and their yellow belt. I mean, there was nothing new. We learned nothing new from Christopher Reeve Superman at all. Everything, there was nothing new. We all knew everything about that. They didn't inject anything.
Except that Marlon Brando was dead.
Yes, that was good. But the thing is, nothing new. We are learning new.
That's what with
Christian Bale, we learned new.
Character, and it's a different tone to the character.
Well, yeah, but
so
you see.
It's darker. That's why they call this the
Well,
Superman.
See, I don't think, I don't say darker. I say it's just like
noir films. They're darker than
right.
Typical
well,
little, you know.
Yeah, but you see, my thing is that they are taking, we're being introduced to this character for the very first time. We don't know what he's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like there never was a Superman. Never was a Superman, and we're learning now what this guy can do.
Well,
he's also learning what he can do,
but so
and what he shouldn't do.
My point was,
yeah,
these are darker, more violent characters.
Well, you're comparing them to somebody.
No,
you can't compare them to anybody.
They are. They're designed that way. That's why even in the comics, when they came out with the reboot on this Batman,
right.
They called it the Dark Knight version.
Dark Knight, right.
It was supposed to be the dark, violent.
Well, but remember, he was when he originally came out, he was Dark Knight.
Oh, yeah.
They changed it for getting more kids involved.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Yeah, we had that nice, you know, McCarthyism comic
right.
code for
right.
20 years there. But
right.
I think the same thing happened to Bond.
Yeah.
The original Bond books where he was a spy, you know, he was killing people. That's what
he was bad. He was bad.
And
bad,
they were brutal.
Bad.
And, you know, he's getting beat up every you know, one he was hitting.
Because
you know,
he's not a superhero.
He'd barely survive and right. save the day and stop the
Daniel Craig.
Oh, no. Right. The intervening when it became just a big, you know, blockbuster thing and let's throw as many Doc Savage gadgets as we can and laser and ray guns and all that kind of stuff. It was also in the time period of the 70s and stuff, right in the middle of all the comic books being really silly and everything being slapstickish.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, that happened to Bond. You know, he became very kid-friendly, family-oriented.
Yeah, right. They wanted
then
to get more kids
back
involved.
Toward a much more, you know, brutal,
and
you know, born identity, actually.
Changed it.
It's changed the
changed
the
dynamic.
So they
right.
said, we can do that again.
Right.
You know,
well, but you
back.
See.
But it was bringing him back to his original.
Right. It was bringing him back to his original. Absolutely.
See, that's
right.
What I'm saying, though. You can't, in my mind, you can't compare just on the
absolutely
same
correct.
Line.
You can't.
Craig,
it's like,
Bond, and the, you know, Roger.
You know, I'm keeping Roger. I'm keeping, what's your name? James Bond's, what's his name's version? The, why am I losing my mind? I'm forgetting all. I'm keeping the original Bond up at the top. All the other Bonds are over on the side, and Daniel Craig just comes up with him or a notch above him.
Right.
Because he, first of all, the original Bond was supposed to be blonde,
mm-hmm.
not
mm-hmm.
okay. And the original Bond in the storylines in the books. Almost dies in every single one of his fights.
Right.
I mean, you never saw that in any of these Bonds with blood on them. And
right.
I mean, and
well,
they wear the tuxedos, and the tuxedos, this guy, he wears a tuxedo, he's got to throw it away.
Yeah.
it can't be clean.
Well, that's the one thing now.
If it's left.
Going back to your point, the first portrayal of Bond,
Sean Connery.
You can't get a better, you know,
oh, no, he's a man. Right.
You know, you get, he's a man's man.
Yeah, well,
he wanders into the room and you just know there's no doubt
that's right.
That if need be, he will kick your
butt all over the room. Absolutely right.
But
right.
Even those were much cleaner and leaner. Now, that time period, you know, he didn't work out like a maniac and become a cut, you know, super insanity abs board
right.
that they do nowadays in films. Let's say even, you know, Craig, you know, all these guys now. I mean, look what they did to Superman. That guy bulked up over 100 freaking pounds. I mean, that's...
Oh, yeah, but he was, now, I mean, he was only like 165.
You know, they got these exercise programs, everything else, that they make these guys look... I mean, look at the perfect example of that is Mr. Song and Dance from Australia transforms himself into a feral beast every couple of years for the Wolverine.
That's right.
And he looks freaking fierce. I'm telling you, it's like, wow.
I know.
It's like, how in the world did you do that? But... Hugh Jackman does, and it's that exercise program. You know, he looks just tough as nails. And the same with Craig.
Yeah.
Craig has the benefit of modern, you know, science, exercise programs, everything else to make him into a
right.
superhuman tough bulldog. Whereas Sean Connery just was, he was hanging around smoking, drinking, and never lifted a barbell in his life.
Well, but that's how the real Bond was.
He had natural, you know,
right.
man
right 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 right
and,
right.
Beat the tar out
and his fights didn't last 3 hours.
Yeah.
His fights were over in 2 minutes.
Yeah.
The longest fight he ever had was with the Russian on the train.
Yeah.
In Promotion with Love. That's the longest fight he ever had.
But
even with Odd Job, I mean,
yeah,
that was simple.
That fight on the train was pretty rough too.
That was a bad
fight.
All right.
But the other thing about this, you know, is he had other things to do, namely the women.
That,
he had to get to the women, so he didn't have time to fight.
He ain't got time for this, cut this show.
No,
but you see...
That's one of the things I've been surprised about with the Craigs.
No, you see, because not yet. He hasn't gotten there yet. Because
I'm seeing this guy suffer through three films. And he
his first film, he just got his 07 license to kill in his first film. So he ain't had time with girls until the second film, and he was only using her just as a way to get by, to get to next to the other guy.
Well, that's
unfortunately,
all the women he meets in his films, like that
girl dead.
In Shanghai or
right.
whatever, it was like, hi, nice to meet you, blam.
Dead, right, absolutely. So he's going to learn how to be suave like Sean Connery. Because, remember, what was the thing? The girl said to him in the last one, he said, I took... I had looked at you and knew what you wore. This is what I want you to wear. And he said, I want you to wear this. He said, and he said, well, gee whiz. And then he's looking in the mirror, sitting in his tie. He said, look good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know. That's right.
He's got to get money pennied and get
suave. Right.
He has to get suave.
He's going to get suave then. Because we just met Money Penny.
Yep.
In the last film,
yep.
Right?
And I thought that was a good way.
That's
to-
right.
I gave that backstory for the first time.
Right,
like,
because
she was a field agent, but didn't like it as much, and/or you know it was too risky for her. So then she did.
See, now I don't remember that end to it in the real James Bond books.
No,
I can't remember,
but
it's a good way to bring her in.
It's great, and then it gives them a little bit of history.
Right,
it gives
with her
flirtatious.
Right,
everything works out. Now it's like when he walks up to the door, it isn't just there's the secretary.
Right,
he like her.
Right,
now you know. So
that's absolutely. So that's well. Hey, getting back to this, why we can talk about this all day. That's right.
I've never gotten over seeing Daniel Craig blown off the top of that train. That was one of the most brutal.
Ooh.
It hit me in the gut so hard when I saw him get shot. I mean, that falling off that train down into the water, and then that Adele song comes on. I almost like to die.
Oh.
That was rough. That's why I'm talking about it. Rough.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That was. Absolutely, a major. As a matter of fact, where did I see that at here? Since you mentioned that,
more brutal. Even on poor Bond, it's brutal.
Since you mentioned it.
When that component is this.
This is the end.
Yeah.
That's right.
It also lets you know how permanent.
50 caliber.
It is.
Nope. And well, let's just listen to a little bit of this. This is the end.
Feel the earth.
Now.
That's how you survive.
That's exactly how you survive. But we got some stuff. Hey, there's a lot of stuff going on today.
There's so much going on in this world.
The president came into the briefing room today.
You might see him on the TV right now if you turn it on.
That's right. And of course, you're going to listen to MSNBC. But the president of the United States went into the briefing room during the daily press conference. Surprised everybody. And I want to read you a little bit of what he said. It ain't all the time that the president drops by during a daily briefing. He said, I want to let you know that over the next couple of weeks, there's going to be obviously a whole range of issues, immigration, economics, et cetera. We'll try to arrange a thorough press conference with an address to answer your questions. But the reason why I actually wanted to come out today is not to take questions, but to speak to an issue that obviously has gotten a lot of attention over the course of the last week. The issue is the Trayvon Martin ruling. I gave a preliminary statement right after the ruling on Sunday, but watching the debate over the course of the last week, I thought it might be useful for me to expand on my thoughts a little bit. First of all, you know I want to make sure that once again I send my thoughts and prayers as well as Michelle's to the family of Trayvon Martin and to remark on the incredible grace and dignity which they dealt with the entire situation. I can only imagine what they're going through, and it's remarkable how they've handled it. Second, I want to say that, and this is to reiterate what I said on Sunday, which is there are going to be a lot of arguments about the legal issues to the case. Let all the legal analysts and all the talking heads address those issues. The judge conducted the trial in a professional manner. The prosecution and the defense made their arguments. The jurors were properly instructed that in a case such as this, reasonable doubt was relevant, and they rendered a verdict. And once the jury's spoken, that's how our system works. But I don't want to just talk a little bit about context and how people have spoken to and how people are feeling. You know, when Trayvon Martin was first shot, I said this could have been my son. Another way of saying that Trayvon Martin could have been me 35 years ago. And when you think about why, in the African-American community at least, there's a lot of pain around what happened here, I think it's important to recognize that the African-American community is looking at the issues through a set of experience and a history that doesn't go away. There are very few African-American men in this country who haven't had the experience of being followed when they were shopping in a department store. And I'm not going to read all of it, but he also went on to say that, you know, I have been profiled before I was the senator. If I would walk past a car, you'd hear the latches latch. If I was in a building that had an alarm, the alarm would go up. People would look at me. If I was shopping, you have people follow you around the store. This has happened to me. So, and what he's saying is that there's an experience that some of the people did not have when they went into the jury deliberations. Not to say that they didn't have other experiences. But there are a few things that, and we're going to have the general counsel, Reverend Eddie Hales, he's the general counsel and managing director for the Advancement Project, and he's going to be on. We'll ask him a couple of these questions that have been on my mind. You know, this stand your ground rule. I mean, the more and more we hear about it, the more and more questions how and why this thing was ever passed. It's now in 25 states.
We know how it was passed, Mike. It's been a NRA.
Well, absolutely.
For a while, they paid for it and they passed it.
And Alex, NRA and Alex have presented, wrote, as a matter of fact, wrote, if you look up the Stand Your Ground law, it's the exact wording in all 24 states.
Right, because that's the same thing they do with all these, you know, everywhere the Republican governor's going in now, they pass these same, you know, anti-abortion.
It did. It's just one script. They wrote out one script and sent it to everybody.
They just sit there and
do you know, and this is statistics that...
We talked about this before, and this made me mad, but we were talking about this before we were going on the air. That Stand Your Ground, to me, it violates our societal order. Because the way it is now, we have police to go out and solve crimes. We have police to control public situations. And they are to go in, and they're the ones that are supposed to be trained professionals. I mean, they go to a police academy, so they have to graduate. They have to become certified to carry weapons and to judge situations in a supposedly neutral, professional, and legal manner. Mm-hmm. Because they understand the law, and they can tell when someone is violating the law, mm-hmm. when someone is acting erratically, when mm-hmm. someone is acting violently or in some other way disturbing the peace. And they are the ones who are then supposed to be we set up a legal system in this country so that not everybody can do anything they want all the time, you know. You can't go take other people's property. You can't go, you know, break into their home. You can't do other things. There are all these boundaries, and they're the ones who are supposed to be the arbiters of justice in America.
Mm-hmm.
They decide if someone has violated the law and need to be arrested, stopped, or in the case of an extreme reaction, use of some kind of fatal force.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this law gives anybody just a free, you know, free pass. You get to shoot anybody you feel ever that threatens you. And, you know, if we just start shooting anybody that threatens us, I mean, every time you're, you know, walking down a dark street.
Well, but then again, what do you consider a threat?
Exactly. It's going to vary from person to person. It's going to also, you know, what are you going to do when you run into those old, you know, people that you...
Old teachers that fail you at school.
You can't stand, or the neighbor that you got in a fight with 10 years ago or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's going to create so many problems because everyone is subjective, and that's the whole point of police.
Mm-hmm.
They're supposed to be objective.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the law is fatally flawed because it takes us back to the old West.
Right.
We're just all walking around with six shooters, mm-hmm. and whoever's the quicker draw, you know, gets to shoot.
Right.
The end. I mean, that's the way that the law is written. Hey, I felt threatened. I just blew him away.
Yeah.
Right? Well, you know, let me get home for Saturday football or whatever. You know, just come on, man.
Well, the Stand Your Ground law, now this is in 24 states now. If you shoot somebody that is not black and you stand your ground state, you have a 56% chance to get off.
So about half-half, you know, 50-50.
Now,
you get the
in these same states, if you shoot somebody who is black, you have a 79% chance to get off. I mean, so what is it? You go into Sears, or you go into Dick's, or you go into Walmart, and you say, yeah, I want to buy a gun. You say, oh, by the way, you have a license to kill any black person you want.
Yeah, basically. 80% chance.
Because on the Castle Doctrine, says that you are on your property if you are within 60 yards of your front door.
Right. So,
you're front door, and you can see somebody you don't like, and you can shoot them and say, they were threatening me.
Right. But at least it's on your own property. So at least there's some kind of something. This Stand Your Ground says that anywhere you go is your castle.
Well,
and you know, you pointed out a brilliant fact or gem on this. Zimmerman shot Trayvon
40 yards from his house
within the castle range of his own home.
Mm-hmm.
So then Zimmerman is the one who is invading.
That's right.
His private property, and he is the one who violated the law of castle. Of
That's right.
Main.
That's right.
But see, again, get back to this. I ask anybody, go look at, you know, Wikipedia is the encyclopedia online. You can go look up things. Go look up Stand Your Ground. Right on the front page with the article that's, you know, telling about it, they have a picture of the hat that the people who, you know, promote it wear, that they give out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a gun on the front of the cat, and it says, "I don't dial 911. Now, that's the Stand Your Ground promotional gear they give. So, see, by its own promotion and definition, they're saying we don't follow the law. We are the law. We don't even have to call them. We, you know, no police necessary. We're the police. We get to decide everything. And I think that turns our legal system on its head. Because how can you possibly, as we saw in the case of Zimmerman, how can you have a neutral party go into a court and say, "I saw party X and party Y doing this, and so-and-so occurred, and, you know, we stopped it and intervened, and so-and-so law was violated." You cannot, because all you got is you against the court.
Right.
"Hey, I thought I was threatened by him." "Okay, you're off. Thanks. Next." It just it subverts justice, and it subverts the police. And I don't think it's like, and I don't understand this. You know, these bumper sticker patriots we got. We got to defend America, and we got to invest in our military, and we got to do everything. Well, they're throwing the police in the garbage can. I mean, this is the thing. So I don't have to dial 911. Yeehaw!
Right.
I got a gun. I mean, isn't that what they always claim? You know, this law is supposed to claim that, you know, all these violent thugs wandering around the streets are threatening them all, and this is the only way to defend themselves, you know? Well, you are the violent thug.
You're
the armed thug.
You are the armed thug.
Talking about creating your own nightmare.
So
what's the answer, though? How about we give out guns to everyone and see how that works out for them?
Well, that's, I think this goes back to the
land.
This goes back to a major thing that was said once by a well-known person of if I can find him on here. It was a well-known.
Here's for instance, a little factoid. In Florida, the self-defense claims.
Yes.
On homicides and violent crimes tripled the year it was passed.
Okay, well, and see, here's another thing. We talk about the gun control.
Good evening, everybody. This is Archie Bunker of 704 Hauser Street, veteran of the big war, speaking on behalf of Guns for Everybody. Now, question. What was the first thing that the communists done when they took over Russia? Answer, gun control. And there's a lot of people in this country who want to do the same thing to us here in a kind of conspiracy, see. You take the big international bankers, they want to, masticate the people of this here nation like puppets on a wing. And then when they get that done, turn us over to the communists. Now, I want to talk about another thing that's on everybody's mind today, and that's your hiccups and your skyjackings, which, if that was up to me, I could end the skyjackings tomorrow.
You could?
All you got to do is arm all your passengers. He ain't got no more superiority there, and he ain't going to dare to pull out no rod. And then your airlines, then they wouldn't have to chase the passengers on the ground no more. They just pass out the pistols at the beginning of the trip, and they pick them up again at the end. Case closed.
Incredible, What do you mean?
Last Saturday.
Good evening, everybody. This is...
Anyway, but... Archie only has the answer.
Yeah.
This is true. Do we need the guns to everybody?
It also shows you that it's...
Now, what happens if you don't like the guy?
Well, exactly.
And you say you want to shoot him because But the other guy's got a gun.
Right. But
what happens then?
That's what I said. It's Old West. It's just whoever draws fastest gets to say, I was threatened. They were threatening each other. I was threatened by the other guy. I win. You're dead. You know? I mean, that is the answer.
Yeah, but you were shooting him and he was standing on his porch. Yeah, but he was going to shoot me when I was walking by his house.
Exactly. And look, I mean, they...
But he shouldn't walk by his house because 60 yards, it's his stolen property.
What do you do, though, when you're walking downtown and there's just all those, you know, people wandering around and, you know, some of them look...
He bumped into me. He was going to kill me. I shot him.
He was walking the same way as me on the street. He must be following me. I got to shoot him.
Must be.
He might rob me in the future at some point, possibly, you know. What is the threat? And then again, that's exactly why I said it takes the law out of the hands of the police.
But if you shoot a black man, you got 79% chance to get off.
That's because all black people are violent.
That's
correct. We know that.
That's correct.
You're all felons and
degenerates. All felons. That's right.
But we should just, you know, go ahead and start shooting first and then ask questions later.
I mean, this is just, you know.
This is insanity. It just is. It literally is old, you know, Wild West, shoot them, everybody just go and shoot them up, and then whoever's, you know, left, I guess you can find somebody to bury them. You know?
I mean, so we have this, ability to now, it seems, and it seems to be more prevalent now since Obama became president. Now, yes, they did pass the Stand Your Ground law before Obama was president, but that's because George Bush was president. And when the Stand Your Ground law was passed? What was that, in the 90s or the 80s? When was Stand Your Ground passed? 90s?
You
can find that. Now,
original...
I think it had to be passed under probably Clinton then. Because they were saying the same catchphrase when Clinton became president. He's going to take your guns.
Right.
He's going to take your guns. And the thing is, you know, it's very easy to give you the shaft if you don't have more than six guns. Because everybody knows you got six arms and you can fire all six guns at one time. Now, it doesn't say anything about... not being able to have, well, you do have the law, you couldn't have a machine gun, but you can have an AR-15 or M-16, which really with a big clip.
By the way, I'm just reading through this, but just want to point this out. The NRA said that it would, just eliminate crime rates. Crime would go down everywhere across the board, and they're claiming that there's a 9% drop in crime anywhere the law is passed. And they say that several states where crime went down. But then Alan Dershowitz, you know, our old famous Alan Dershowitz, they all pointed out that what they're saying is actually, you know, under Clinton years, the crime rates dropped nationwide everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just quoting the crime rate dropping. So that was their proof that it worked. But they said actually Texas A&M did a long-range study on Stand Your Ground laws, and they showed that they have a statistically significant increase in raw homicide rates everywhere in the past, which makes sense. It's just completely obvious. You're shooting more, you know.
So you're saying that the more you shoot,
the more homicides there are.
The more homicides.
It's almost like there's a correlation between shooting guns at people and hurting and
now, are you sure? Are you sure that? That doesn't agree with you. I don't believe that. I think you're just a communist. You're just a communist. That's all it is. Because the people don't agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, after all, when we're you have to really be in space to understand. Is this where we are? Are we in outer space now?
Makes you wonder sometimes, doesn't it?
I mean, what What is the deal here? Have you found a clip on Alex? What Alex has done?
I haven't looked up Alex.
Yeah, not Alex. I mean, Sandy Brown. How long has that been in?
Well, it looks like it's been kicking around here.
Was it the 80s or the 90s?
Original. It said 2005.
Okay, well, then it had to be under the Bush administration because they were given carte blanche in the Bush administration with the NRA.
Yeah.
And that's when Alec and the NRA started going out and spreading this around that you should have the right to shoot anybody that comes near you if you suspect them. It's just like shoot first, ask questions later. Don't worry, Marshall Dillon will be coming in and you can explain to him.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Matt was fair. I mean, because he got all his advice from Kitty, you know.
Well, you know, they said that they take their language from the Supreme Court ruling in 1895 that says within your own home, if you come under attack on your premise, quote, and you did not provoke the assault and had at that time reasonable grounds to believe in good faith beyond all doubt that the deceased intended to take your life or do you great bodily harm, and you were not obliged to retreat, and there was no consideration as to whether you could safely retreat, you were entitled
in your own home. You
stand your ground in your home and defend your life.
Okay.
Now, that's what they use as the name and the reasoning, but they say anywhere you are, you can stand your ground.
Well, then.
From any threat.
Well, then, but they also have in Florida a ruling that if you discharge a firearm anytime, mm-hmm. it's a mandatory sentence. So how does this conflict?
Yeah.
Because as we're going to talk about in a little while when Reverend Hales comes on, there's a case right now. Marissa Alexander,
mm-hmm.
black woman, got 20 years of firing a warning shot in her house from an abusive husband who came in and was going to attack her again.
Right. And this is already documented. She'd already been, she had just gotten out of the hospital from the last.
He had not supposed to come within any, 100 yards of her or something?
Yeah. And that was within her own home.
That's right. It was inside a house.
So that was like
the bullet could have went out and hit somebody.
Well,
they said
it just defies logic, though. That was everything that it was supposed to be doing. She was in her own home trying to defend herself from a violent attacker, proven violent attacker who had beaten her many times before and already had restraining orders for said crimes.
Right.
And yet she still gets nailed because she's the black woman.
Now
this guy Zimmerman follows a boy carrying. And this is the part that cracks me up. Let's follow the logic. He's texting his girlfriend on his cell phone, carrying Skittles that he's eating, walking from a store back to his house through his neighborhood, where, you know, he lived, by the way, but walking to his house. This guy starts following him because he thinks he's so violent. And then his defense is that when he goes and confronts him, even though the police on the phone say, do not follow or confront, but regardless of all that, see, I thought that was instantaneously he had violated the law. But anyway, he confronts the boy. He claims the boy, and I'm sorry, but any self-respecting, been through training, got firearm licensed, security guard guy that is Mr. Defender of Neighborhoods who feels threatened by children with Skittle bags is the biggest. Oh my God, this is laughable in its entirety. But so this guy, Mr. Defender, says that this child gets on him and starts beating him in the face and head and then beats him with paving stones.
Lift it up.
He's got Skittle bag and a phone. With what hand?
And don't forget, he's got that dangerous iced tea with him.
Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous, though, on his face. The kid is carrying soft drinks and candy. He's talking on a phone, and yet somehow he beats a guy that's a trained professional with a weapon.
Well,
and beats his head.
This man went to classes, MMA classes,
right,
for 8 months, 9 months.
Right.
The instructor said, he was a plus 5.5. Before he got there, he was a minus +5. Now he's a +5. But, what does +5 mean? Well, first of all, Trayvon was going for the gun. This is a lot of stuff that's wrong. Trayvon was going for the gun. Well, how could he go for the gun? How could he see the gun when this guy was laying on his back and the gun out of Zimmerman's own mouth was in the back, the small of his back?
Right, in a holster in his back.
In a holster that you can't see because it goes behind you.
And the other thing is, if you looked at did you see that recreation they did on TV? He said this child, again, beat him down, got on top of him, straddled his chest.
MMA style.
His legs over his arms and shoulders. And then was beating him in the head. And then was going for a gun. Now, if you just do it, you can go lay down and do this. But straddle anyone, your legs block the sides of your body because you're straddling somebody.
That's right.
You know, A, he couldn't then go reach for a gun behind somebody's back. B, Zimmerman couldn't reach for a gun behind his back when someone is sitting across his chest over his arm.
Well, that is absolutely true.
And then reach up and shoot the
guy. Well, what actually happened was they were both standing up when he was shot. Because Zimmerman, if it goes that Trayvon was on top of him, Trayvon got off of him at some point where he could get the gun. But what happened was the gun is in the small of his back. He had to get up to get the gun.
Right.
He couldn't reach it laying on his back. So, and if you're reaching for something like that, and I see you reaching for something like that, I'm going to be on you worse than I ever was before. So he got off of him and stood back from him because they said he could have been shot straight on. But people never saw that. They only saw him laying on his back. No one ever saw the gun fire. So they say.
Right. Now, two things. Someone pointed this out the other day. If you're stalking someone, and then you go and confront them, and then you pull a weapon on them, and all that kind of stuff, how come stand your ground defense doesn't apply to Trayvon?
Well, it's because that Trayvon, before he pulled the gun, he's claiming that Trayvon smacked him in the face and broke his nose. That's why he was laying on the ground. But yet, Zimmerman's, the whole back of his jacket and everything was soaking wet with grass stains. So when did his head hit the sidewalk?
Right.
And if you look carefully at the police bringing Zimmerman into the precinct, they had close-ups of him. There was no blood on his head or his nose.
Right.
We saw him three-quarters of his face.
Right.
Not full face, but three-quarters of it. There was no nose.
The kid beat him over and over and over.
Now, all right, so they want to throw everything else out but racism and stand your ground, which don't think about standing your ground, but let me tell you about standing your ground. Now, the other thing is that we have another issue with this case, and that is, I believe, the district attorneys were hamstrung not to use all the bullets in their quiver. They never brought out but one time that the weapon was in the small of Zimmerman's back. They never brought out the castle rule,
right,
that Zimmerman was on his property because it was only like 60 yards, less than 60 yards from his house. They never brought out the fact that Trayvon was being stalked and that he had the right to confront his stalker.
Right.
And they also never brought out, I wonder what would have happened if Trayvon Martin had the gun and Zimmerman would have been the stalkee. They did bring it out. The prosecutor brought that out in the very last three or four sentences when he addressed the jury.
Right.
But So what would have happened? Would Trayvon been found innocent? If Zimmerman was dead now and Trayvon had the gun?
He'd be crying.
Already?
Yeah. I mean, you've got to be kidding me. There wouldn't even been a freaking trial.
I mean, it's just a question that none of these, well, I think I heard maybe Joy Reid on MSNBC ask the question. But that is a major problem with me. Because there's no consistency here. There's the Castle Doctrine. It seems like this stand your ground rule is only in effect for certain people.
Yep.
Because if the Castle rule works, Zimmerman is in the wrong. He came into Trayvon Martin's house.
Well, look, and you can see the direct results of it, too. Just after this verdict, did you hear about the guy in, can't remember where it was, not Fort Lauderdale, somewhere, where the guy at a gas station.
Oh, yes.
Shot the kid dead.
Right. The kids in the car because he told them to turn down their radio.
Right.
It was too loud.
And then his defense was instantly when they said, you know.
Stand your ground.
He said, hey, I felt threatened by their violent music.
That's right.
Right? Because I didn't like the music and it sounded aggressive.
The only problem with him was that he ran. You see, he ran to a hotel. He rent from that place, went and got a pizza, ordered a pizza at a store, took it out. Went to the hole. He was coming from a wedding.
Because he was afraid he wouldn't be able to eat it and put in jail.
Well, he took it and on the run and ate it.
Look.
So they had to bring him back. He was in Florida. Had to bring him back to Florida. So now let's see if he can use. Now, the person is dead.
Yeah.
In the car.
Again, it shows you the fallacy of law.
I saw a gun.
I was threatened by the.
I saw a gun, he said.
Aggressive music. You know, it's all lies. It's just BS.
It allows
you to be a cowboy and shoot.
And this is just after Trayvon Martin, so you know he knew about the Trayvon Martin case.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who doesn't know it is completely brain dead.
Yeah.
Now they also one of these things that it was that a lot of people don't understand. They said, well, how do they go for three people for conviction and three people not for open conviction? And then wind up with three people, six people for conviction. Because the first test of any good jury is, let's show a hand and see where we're at.
Mm-hmm.
Or let's write down a piece of paper, show where we're at. Well, they had one person that was for second degree murder.
Yeah.
And the other two were for manslaughter.
Right.
And the other people said no. And then they come out and ask what the parameters for manslaughter. But what the judge gave him was that when she directed the jury, when she charged the jury, she gave them the complete instructions for stand your ground. And it was not a stand your ground case.
And that's why one of the jurors, in their defense, when they
came in the defense, which, but you got to remember, she was for Zimmerman from the very beginning.
Oh, I know. She said that. They had no choice but to find it innocent because of the way the judge instructed them.
Well, and another question I have is, I understand that her husband is a lawyer in Florida.
How convenient.
How did this woman get on the jury?
Exactly.
How did the prosecuting attorneys allow that woman to get on the jury?
Mm-hmm.
Did they use up all their no's?
But here's the thing. You know, there must have been something to it because I was just blown away.
I'm thinking they were hamstrung. I think they were directed.
I don't know.
From the state.
The whole thing's a travesty. But look, it could just be a case of just like with.
But they were pissed off. I don't think they did a good job.
It could have been a case like with OJ where they just had the dream team.
That was not a dream team. That was not a dream team. That guy West ought to be prosecuted himself.
Mr. Kardashian on it.
Wet dream. But that's the OJ did have a dream team.
They were able to totally buffalo the legal system and just get away with, you know, chopping the girl's head off. And I think in this case, the prosecutors or whatever from the guy, they sucked.
They were horrible. They were horrible because they neglected to talk about a lot of things that were relevant.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to be begin with, I mean, you've got a guy who not only just killed the kid, but he lied repeatedly. He changed his story repeatedly.
Absolutely, three or four times.
All of that should have just been the red flags that put him away, no matter what.
But the jury says we didn't discuss any of that.
Exactly. That's why it should
be. We didn't even talk. We didn't even, that didn't enter into our thing. They did, you know, building a house or painting. Okay, I want you to paint this wall, but I only want you to go halfway because I don't want it to bleed into the other side. You keep painting. Well, you didn't tell me halfway. I didn't have a ruler, so
yeah.
I couldn't measure halfway.
Right.
What, are you kidding me? It just doesn't make sense, a lot of this. And let me tell you, there's a statistic here. Crime is driven approximately, crime is driven approximately and opportunistically, this guy Jamie Bowyer writes, which is why 86% of white victims were killed by white offenders. Now, that's not what we hear. That's not what we hear.
Right.
So out of that 20, less than 20, out of that 14% that's left, you're telling me that's the only ones that are shooting, 14% is the only ones that are shooting killing white victims is Hispanics, Blacks, Asians, Indians,
right,
Mohawks, Mongolians.
There's always, you know, there's this fear of the other that drives so many people. And here in America with the our history of racism, a lot of times it focuses on Blacks, but it's ignorance and fear. I mean, here's a this is a direct quote. Somebody's asking. I'm just looking up stuff online. But this is a question from Texas,
mm-hmm.
talking about Black people's behavior,
mm-hmm.
and why they're scary and why everything else, right?
Why it's scary?
Yeah, but here's a question from a Texas person online. This is just in a forum. It says, why do Black people have to act like animals? I live in Texas all my life, and all the Black people here act like animals. They're all ignorant. They're rude, impatient. They got attitude, and especially they get POed in general. Well, most of them, they're all uneducated. They just try to steal and cheat people, and they think that because they were once slaves, they can act this way. But most nowadays, you see, they're just nothing but crooks, prostitutes, crackheads, drug dealers, assholes, etc. The list goes on. They're disgusting and should be wiped off from the human race.
And I can't talk any further because I have to look at my crack pipe fills.
Yeah. See, this is a whole forum on why, you know, Black people are so scary and so this and that and the other. This is the kind of ignorance and hatred and fear that's all over the place. And you see it in, you know, Rand Paul and Ron Paul's campaigns that continually have, you know, put out the fires of our racist pamphlets and everything else that they
mm-hmm.
wrote. But there's an entire strain of these ultra-conservative, racist, you know, backwoods morons that comes to fruition in the Republican Party these days. And unfortunately, it used to be in the Democratic Party before civil rights. But that just view them as subhuman, you know, animals. And, I mean, like the person said, they act like wild animals. You know, they're not even human. So they think it's perfectly legitimate to do everything possible to separate, incarcerate, and or kill, whatever you need to do
mm-hmm.
to Blacks to give up.
Absolutely.
And so that's why you have these things like, I mean, I'm sorry, but the application of that law, you're saying 80%, you know, getting off when you shoot a Black person.
Mm-hmm.
It's Just look at the attitude. So that's what causes a law like this. The fact that you have to feel that you have to go around with guns
right.
and shoot people all day because they're scary for their, you know, ghetto music.
Right.
So what are you talking about?
Well, let me give you some more statistics. The Federal Bureau of Investigation of Justice Statistics show that among black youth, rates of robbery and serious property offenses are at their lowest rate in 40 years as a rate of violent crimes and victimization. And while it's true that young black men are a disproportionate share of the nation's murder victims, it's hard to disentangle this from the stew of hyper-segregation, often a result of deliberate policies, entrenched poverty, and non-existent economic opportunities that characterize a substantial number of black communities. Hence, the countless inner-city anti-violent groups that focus on creation opportunity for young, disadvantaged black Americans through education, mentoring, and community programs, black care intensity about the violence that happens in their communities. After all, they have to live there. Now, black-on-black crime has been part of the American lexicon for decades, but a specific phenomenon is no more real than white-on-white crime. Unlike latter, however, the idea of black-on-black crime taps into specific fears around black masculinity and black criminality. The same fears that in Florida led to George Zimmerman to focus his attention on Trayvon Martin, and in New York, continue to justify Michael Bloomberg's campaign of policy harassment against young black men in New York City's Stop and Frisk program. And this is what it's about. We're giving you a license when you buy your gun, and with that license, you're more apt to shoot. We're giving you 73% of a chance to shoot someone who's minority. These people say, well, you can change statistics, and you go, well, you can't change that statistic.
Right. And the whole point, you know, with weapons is this, and this is the thing we talked about before with the school shootings. You remember the NRA answer to that was,
mm-hmm.
let's arm all the students
right.
and teachers and everybody
right.
else, you know, custodians and everybody, I guess, be pulling out, you know, M16s and stuff. The more weapons you introduce into any situation, the more chance they are being used.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just natural. I mean, think of this. Let's take the Zimmerman-Trayvon case exactly as Zimmerman says it is.
Right.
Okay. He tracks this boy across the neighborhood, confronts him, scares the kid to death, and the kid popped him in the nose.
Yeah,
because
right.
guess what he has?
He has a legal weapon.
Yeah,
only if you're a fighter. It's not a legal weapon if you're not a fighter.
But the point is, even if, let's say, they got into a huge fist fight together and all that, that would have been the deal, a fist fight. But when you have weapons, like Zimmerman does, then you can revert to using them. You know, if you have a knife, you're going to stab somebody. You know, if you have a gun, you're going to shoot somebody.
Well, isn't it a fact, though?
Why wouldn't you? I mean, if you have a weapon and you're walking around with it in your hand, why not use it?
Well, isn't it a fact, though, that once you are a black belt,
you're actually deadly weapons.
Are they deadly weapons?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's just boxers and MMA fighters cannot fight public.
Well,
they can't fight people. Like,
that's right. And you see, and Florida Stand Your Ground law has allowed, this is another statistic, we're talking about statistics here, they have allowed drug dealers to avoid murder charges and gang members to walk free. It has stymied prosecutors and confused judges. It also serves to an intended purpose, exonerating dozens of people who were deemed to be legitimately acting in self-defense. Among them, a woman who was choked and beaten by an irate tenant, and a man who was threatened in his driveway by a felon. 7 years since it was passed, Florida Stand Your Ground law is being invoked with unexpected frequency in ways no one imagined. To free killers and violent attackers whose self-defense claims seem questionable at best. And in most comprehensive effort and of its kind, the Tampa Bay Times identified nearly 200 Stand Your Ground cases and their outcomes. The Times identified cases through the media reports, court records, and dozens of interviews with prosecutors and defense attorneys across the states. And just give you one among the findings, those who invoke Stand Your Ground to avoid prosecution have been extremely successful. Nearly 70% have gone free.
70%. So it's just a license to kill?
It's a license.
You can just get out of jail free?
It is a license to kill.
See, I used to think that when you shot people dead,
right,
called it murder. But now it's
you
just,
think?
Yeah.
Well,
you know,
we're going to talk about this because right now we have coming up. General Counsel for the and Managing Director of the Advances Project, Ms. the Reverend Edward Hale.
God bless you, Brother Lawson. Good to hear your voice.
Good to hear your voice, too. I hope you were able to listen to some of the stuff we were talking about.
I did, yes, I did.
I mean, the statistics are just so off the chain. That, I mean, you just can't deny them anymore.
For shooting blacks, you get an 80%.
It says here that 50, you have a 56% chance to get off if you kill somebody that is not black, but a 79% chance to get off if you shoot somebody that is black. I mean, so when you go to Walmart and you buy a gun, this also is a license to shoot anybody that's black? And you very well going to get off?
Wow.
I mean, this is just mind-boggling. And I understand, or you can maybe correct me if you know it wrong, but the castle doctrine, didn't that say that your castle is within 60 yards of your house?
Yeah, that sounds like the exact distance that Trayvon Martin was from the home where he was staying.
That's correct. Absolutely.
He was within his own.
He was family. Within his own boundaries of his own property.
Right.
So, and the thing is, you know, I hate to say this because the president just came out. I read a partial of his statement that he made this afternoon, and to me, the prosecutors were hamstrung. They did not use or were not able to use all the weapons in their quiver. They were not allowed to use Stand Your Ground for Trayvon, and the judge says this is not a Stand Your Ground case. But yet, almost every word she gave them was part from Stand Your Ground. When she charged the jury.
It certainly did appear to give give the defense team opportunities to emphasize self-defense based on the evidence that was presented.
And Trayvon had no self-defense.
Right.
They did not say anything about him having self-defense. And the thing is that he's being pounded by Trayvon. Zimmerman's being pounded. Zimmerman is laying on his back with the gun in the small of his back. He had a weapon that was holstered in a holster that was in the small of his back. Now, how did Trayvon see that with X-ray eyes, I imagine?
Right.
And, you could try this case over and over forever and ever, but put my 2 cents in it. I think that Trayvon got off of him, and Zimmerman took out his gun and shot him. That's how
in
it
the
is.
Heart.
Go,
in the heart. That sounds that's, like carefully aiming, not someone who is in fear of their life and just shoots randomly to protect themselves. That sounds like someone who is aggressively and assertively making a calculated shot to kill someone when it goes
absolutely
through the heart.
And why? Because he knew the Stanier Brown law because he got an A in that part of the course.
Well, and there's also the fact that this guy, if you look at his history, they said he made 400 calls.
Well, yeah.
Blacks before 911 and
right
stuff. And then he actually was following this guy across the neighborhood, even while on the phone
right
they're telling him not
right
to. So well, this guy is violating the law
right
on a mission to hunt this guy down. I mean,
I just think there's so many things in the prosecution of this case where they did not willingly or did not because they weren't smart know how what to use to win this case. This was a winnable case, especially when your jury goes into the deliberating room and three want the man guilty, one for second degree murder. I mean, you know that I'm not a lawyer, but I played one in school. I thought for 9 years I showed in my film class and taught 12 Angry Men, the original version with Henry Fonda, and we had the kids act it out in the drama class, but the kids had to research the law as part of their history course, so they can get credit for it. But the whole thing with if you remember the original storyline and the original film, the black and white version, the judge, when he's charging that all male white jury, he didn't even look at them. He was jumping his pencil up and down on his desk and said it like, don't forget to get me a can of milk and some eggs when you go to the store.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, how the judge charges the jury is like, I think, almost a quarter. It's more than a quarter. Maybe it's a third of what the jury takes back into the deliberating room with them. As I said, I'm not a lawyer, but I played one for 9.5 years. But this is the main thing that I just don't understand. And people, so many people get on the air and talk about things about the law that they know nothing about and don't know. You know, those jurors didn't know what we knew. So there's a lot of things that they lacked. They did not know. They were not sitting in front of the TV and listening to MSNBC and CNN and Fox News and said, oh, man, he did that? Oh, no, they had to take what they were given. And, you know, if the glove don't fit, you must acquit.
Yeah.
So I guess the glove did not fit in this case.
Yeah, but common sense. You know, you would just say, this guy is hunting down.
Now, I understand that when we were speaking earlier, is the Advancement Project involved in – well, I know they're involved with all the nonsense is going on in Florida and around this country, but what are they doing – or are they doing anything involved with this case?
Well, with this case, we've certainly joined others in asking the Department of Justice to reopen its investigation of the – the killing of Trayvon Martin. I was at a social action luncheon of the centennial celebration of the Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated earlier this week, and Attorney General Eric Holder spoke at that luncheon and mentioned that indeed the investigation had been launched a year ago, and then it was suspended when the state's investigation took over, which is typical. And now that a verdict was rendered, they reopened that investigation. And what our hope is, because you don't always find the Department of Justice will bring a prosecution, but they can, and they should, where the evidence points to a violation of the victim's civil rights. And because of the tremendous resources the Department of Justice can bring to an investigation, they can possibly uncover things that the state either overlooked or decided not to pursue. They can conduct more interviews. They can use more forensic technology and tools to look at things. So we're at least hopeful that in their investigation they will find more evidence to bring some type of federal action into being. And then, of course, we're also just joining our local partners in talking about the need for these stand your ground laws. We call them shoot first laws. To be repealed, and whatever we can do, because this is not just a moment; it's a movement. People were shaken to their core by the thought that a unarmed teenage young man could be walking home to watch the second half of a NBA All-Star game and suddenly lie on a on the ground with a bullet in his heart, and that there's an acquittal in a case like that. So we're hurt, we're angry, we're joining other people and figuring out how we can again engage this nation in this very important discussion about racial profiling. So often our nation wants to put on the shelf this discussion about race, and every time we put race on the shelf, the people of color populations are particularly hurt. And people believe and want to believe that we live in a colorblind society, so we don't need affirmative action. We don't need the Voting Rights Act. We need these stand your ground laws. And every time the people in the nation buy into that, we're the ones that face voter suppression. We're the ones who see our numbers decreasing in college admissions. We're the ones that lie on the ground with a bullet through our heart. So we've got to get the nation to face the reality that there are problems based on race in our country that have to be addressed in very strong ways. And so we're happy to hear the president acknowledge his own reality, what he faces every day. And we know that we have to keep reminding people that these issues don't go away. You have to solve them.
Right.
That's one thing that I love that the president did come out of, and just not even from a race point of view, but from a simple human compassion point of view. I understand. You know, we all go through this every day. You know, we can. That's the thing that blew my mind about this being a parent. You know, I don't understand how those people sat on that jury and acquitted, you know, when an adult supposedly trained guard, you know, of a neighborhood goes and shoots a child. How is that even, why are we even having an argument? You know what I mean?
Right.
So that whole thing bothers me, but I was very glad to see the president do that. Now, two things. One, I mean, we talk about race. We all knew that if this was reversed, if there was a, you know, blonde-haired, blue-eyed child walking back with his soft drink in between the golf classic on TV and got shot by a black guy, we wouldn't even have this discussion. But taking it from here, North Carolina, you know, we just had this just seismic shift in governance with the Republicans roaring back to power and trying to apparently race us right back to, you know, 1860 or something. So we've seen the last couple of weeks with them ramrodding through the new budgets, and you know, they're trying, you know, voter suppression. They're doing all these things. Well, you know that South Carolina passed Stand Your Ground and all that, but we have been holding off on that. Do you think that North Carolina will be a target, if you will, use the term, for you know, ramming through a Stand Your Ground law here?
That would be such a slap in the face, and yet it is not beyond possibilities. We have been standing shoulder to shoulder with the leader of this movement, Reverend Barber, and we've Advance for Project is pouring in resources to help push back against these right-wing moves to make it harder for people to get the support they need from their government. And certainly yesterday with a more restrictive voter ID bill put before the Senate Rules Committee, we just have a lot of fights. And to bring that fight to North Carolina with a Stand Your Ground law, I've just been so proud of the citizens of North Carolina standing up and being willing to go to jail and say that this is a moral issue. And when it comes to gun violence in our nation, that's really a moral issue. And I would just hope that the people in control would not consider it, but at this point, having seen what they've done already, I certainly can't dismiss it as impossible.
Now, with this this ruling by the Supreme Court, Section 4 is what everybody's focused on for the Voting Rights Act, and the Section 4 dealt with the formula of how we determined whether or not a state was preventing people from voting. Am I correct?
That's right, the formula. Yeah, Section 4 provided the formula that determined which states would be covered by Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. And Section 5 requires all voting changes to be pre-cleared by the Department of Justice or U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia before they're enacted or implemented.
Now, that was, I guess, there's like three or four sections or elements of it, one being what you just said, the second one being the requirement of a review under the Section 5, that any changes affecting voting has to go through the district court or the attorney general. Am I correct?
That's right.
And the third was the ability of the attorney general to certify the jurisdictions also require appointment by federal examiners. But they also had a way to get out from under.
Exactly right. Yeah, this was not something that was permanent and just a total domination. If you had gone a number of years without any established voting violations under the law, you could petition the court to be bailed out, as we call it. It could be bailed out. And there are many jurisdictions over the years that have bailed out of the Voting Rights Act because they had, if you will, a clean record over a number of years.
That's a proven track record.
Right. And what really gets me is the one that this is all about that creates this whole juror, which is, I think, is it Sanford, Georgia? Which is the one that went took this to the court? They're the ones they were denied for like the fifth or sixth time, and they were just denied when Bush was in office. They were denied, and they have been just denied again.
Yep.
So they took away the Supreme Court because they knew or they thought they had one more person that could turn this over.
Right.
That's all they needed.
You know, get out a different way.
And so what? Well, now I understand that you're going to be up my way very shortly, Monday, for Moral Monday.
That's right. That's right. That's right. We have been very amazed and impressed and supportive of the movement in North Carolina because we know that it's starting in North Carolina and is sending signals throughout the South about not just accepting these restrictive and very reactionary laws that are put in place in support of moneyed interest, but that, you know, you can stand up against it. And so we want to support it as much as we can. So we plan to continue to be present, supporting the people that are part of the rally, and to work with Reverend Barber and other leaders of the state to strategize on ways to be effective in fighting back against the harms that are being done by these laws.
Well, I'll tell you, Reverend Barber is no joke. He don't take no mess.
That's right.
And,
that's right.
We will be up there. I think I'm going to be able to get up there. So, So what I will do is I'm going to, when you get up there, I'm going to text you my cell phone number. And,
okay.
When you get up there, you just call me, and then we can possibly meet together someplace.
Okay. Well, look forward to that.
About a 3.5 hour drive for me, 3 hours, with no traffic. Obeying the speed limit.
Right, right.
So, what is the Advancement Project doing for the rest of the country that seems to be under this veil of hypocrisy?
Well, we are a national civil rights action tank. We provide support to local organizing efforts. With communications, with strategic communications techniques informed by careful legal reasoning, policy analysis. We work with diverse coalitions in the area of improving voting rights and election administration. We are working hard to end the school to prison pipeline. So many of our young children of color are being suspended, expelled, and arrested for minor behaviors in classrooms that used to result in people being sent to the principal's office. They're now getting arrested for acts of what are called willful disobedience, which is very, very vague. And it pushes our students out of school. They miss a quality education. And the only thing that's left for them, because they're unqualified to get jobs if they don't have the proper education, is a life in prison. And so we're trying our best around the nation, working with other advocacy organizations, working with the school boards and teachers and administrators to come up with solutions to what we see as a horrible trend. And then, of course, on voting rights, we just see these measures to make it harder for the people who elected progressive leadership in state legislatures, and then, of course, in the White House. These the right has put in place mechanisms to just make it harder for folks to participate in our democracy, and we keep pushing back against those laws every day through our analysis, strategic communications, and when necessary, litigation.
Well, I know you're busy, but before you go, I know someone wants to ask you a question, and that is from our own resident, Dr. House, Grace Steve Galloway, is the
chair for the
Democratic Party.
Hi there.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I have been listening into your conversation, and I cannot tell you, first of all, it's been really difficult for many of us to watch this trial.
Yeah.
But it became really, I couldn't believe the verdict. Let me just put it that way. I could not believe the verdict. A young man is dead. How can,
it was going to be just a, you know, manslaughter or some kind of a degree. So that was the only question we were going to resolve.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Grace, I know you're involved with a lot of stuff that's going on up there this year for the party. Do you have anything specifically you want to ask Reverend Hales while he's while I have him holding him on here before he, you know, he's very busy.
I do. What I need to know from you is, what I would like to hear from you actually is how do we have any candidates, especially minorities, you know, people who are interested in running for office. We need to nurture, we need to groom, we need to do all that sort of stuff. Does your organization keep an ear to the ground as far as that is concerned?
That's a very good question, and I'm so happy you asked it, because we are a 501c3 organization that is very careful not to intervene in any political campaigns. We follow the law, and doing it the way we do, we generally are more in touch with people who are playing an advocacy role as opposed to running for office. What we see, though, is that with all of the bad things that are happening in our nation today, if there's any silver lining, it is that you are beginning to see a tremendous lineup of young leaders who are organizing people, showing the same type of skills that it would take to run an election if they chose to run. We are following the Dream Defenders in Florida that took over the state capitol and forced the governor to meet with them last night. And when you start hearing about the way they're organizing the logistical dynamics of having large numbers of people in a public building, just being able to feed them, secure them, making sure that they're doing interviews with the media, you just see a lot of talent. You see a lot of skills. You see a lot of organizing abilities. And I think because they're such great advocates, they are certainly looking for ways to have a permanent mark on bringing about change. And so they are likely to be willing to run into opportunities to run for office. We also work with a group of young elected leaders. They're on school boards. They're on county commissions, and they meet regularly, and in different parts of the country. And there's a whole network of them, and they get trainings. And we've actually, as Advancement Project, have gone to their convenings to present to them information about all of the issues that we see. So I've just been very, very proud of the young folks I see moving from advocacy positions to elected positions. So they're out there, and you should be proud to know that that's happening. And the more they try to hold us back, the more I see God raising up a whole nother lineup of leaders, and that's what I see.
And you know,
thank you.
And you're welcome.
You know that what you were saying about these young leaders rising up in the community leaders. Well, we have the biggest community leader ever, who's now president of the United States.
Yep.
So
yeah,
they are out there.
That's right.
Community organizer.
That's right. So you know, just like the half governor said, oh, a community organizer. Well, yeah, community organizer, president. And I just before you go, I know you have to leave. Can you mention what you told me that I would like you to mention again about what you we were talking about on the phone this morning about the I believe was your father said to you?
Well, it actually, and you're very kind to remember that. And some of us in different times of our life may go through medical situations or some loss or some disappointment that makes us feel that we can't keep going forward. And I remembered and I shared with you as you talked to me about your own situation that when I was younger, I had the opportunity to hear Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Sr. He was called affectionately Daddy King, preach. And he mentioned in his sermon that people often ask him how he could continue to go on after having his wife tragically shot and killed during a church service as she was playing the organ. And then how did he overcome the tragedy of one of his sons dying from drowning? And then, of course, the tragic shooting of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And he was asked, how do you go on after you have all of those big losses in your life? And he said, well, always remember to thank God for what you have left. And he had other family members left. And he said, now, if you have a receding hairline, thank God that you have some hair left. And he said, if you don't have any hair, thank God you have a head. There's always something to be thankful for. And I remember that. I've applied that. And we all suffer losses from time to time, but we get the energy and the strength from knowing that what we have left is enough to move us forward.
I think that's a wonderful way for us to end our segment with you. And I'm hoping I'm going to text you. I'll email it to you, my cell phone, so we can connect Monday when we get up there. I had to leave here. Well, you said, what time did you start up there?
We start pretty early in the morning. But yeah, I'll definitely make sure we get in touch.
Oh, very good. So it probably won't be about 10 or 11 when I get up there. But
no,
okay,
that's fine. And one last thing, Reverend Hales, before you go.
Yeah.
Since
sure.
You're in touch with so many groups now, I'd love just because you speak so well if you could somehow get in there. But anyway, I'll just throw it out there in case you that might be interested. But this morning before the president spoke, Senator Dick Durbin actually came out, and he is starting a Judiciary Committee investigation of the Stand Your Ground laws.
Okay,
and
great.
Beginning in September, and that they were going to start looking now for speakers and for people who want to come and testify and blah, blah, blah. So if
okay.
you know of any that needs to be on that panel, you tell them to get in touch.
Okay, we certainly will. We've had a good working relationship with him. We've testified before his committee. He's a great senator. There is a pending bill to end racial profiling, and that will help to it really dovetails into the Stand Your Ground laws, too. So together we can push both of those.
Well, maybe we push it hard enough and fast enough, we can head it off before it becomes a law in North Carolina, too.
That's right. That's right. Well, so good to talk to all of you, and keep up the good work.
And we will and I will definitely be, I'll email it to you. I'll email it to you the number that you can give me for, all right?
That'll be fine. Okay, yes.
That's our resident lawyer in the House, General Counsel, and Managing Director of the National Project, Reverend Edward Hales. Thank you.
God bless you. Take care.
Well, we are back.
You ain't going to play that again, are you? Hey,
ma'am.
What a brilliant, inspiring person.
Oh, yeah,
I mean, what an absolutely brilliant, inspiring person.
Monday, I'm going to take a trip up to for Monday and see what's going on. And, I'm thinking maybe it might be better if I go up there Sunday on my with my leg.
And then stay, yeah.
And spend
if
the
you've
night.
Got to drive up there again, car and race around all day, you're going
to... Yeah, I'm going to need that, yeah, because I won't be able to leave.
Yeah, you're going to have to miss a few more shows, you know, if you do that.
I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. My doctor did tell me that the problem might be in my brain.
Well,
so he
what brain?
That's
the problem. You don't have a problem.
No.
That was not the case. But
tell me something about doing the show from the beach. What?
Right.
What?
That is definitely going to be one of the things. Hey, I had a postponement trip to go to Puerto Vallarta, so please, you know I'm upset.
Yeah.
Anyway, what is going on with the 8th Congressional District?
Well, Scotland County is being organized. They've had their precinct meeting. Scotland County. Representative Doug Young and Senator Purcell have stepped up to the plate, and they've organized 8 out of 10 precincts in Scotland County. I can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
You can't hear?
Doug Young. Yeah. Representative Doug Young. He's no longer in the legislature. But anyway, he's organized 8 out of 10 and maybe 10 out of 10 by the time we're speaking as right now. But there are only 10 precincts in Scotland County. And the convention is this next Saturday, not tomorrow, but a week from tomorrow. And that's going to be in Laurinburg. And I am so proud of Scotland County. I could almost get, it's such a difficult time, and they just came together and did it. They just did it.
Well, Scotland County wasn't, the last time they were organized, I was the 8th district chair. That's a long time ago.
It's been a while.
Now, how is, Mr. Galloway?
He's doing so much better. Thank you for asking. He's getting better every single day. We just a few low blood sugar episodes, and certainly not as bad as he has been. He's just improving every single day. Of course, we have the best doctors in the world. We have the best internal medicine doctor, Dr. Doug Kelling.
I thought you were talking about yourself.
You never treat your own family because you're too close to the issue, you know. You don't see what other people can see. Besides, Doug Kelling, I want you to know, is my mentor. I trained with him. I did my internship with him. So he's brilliant, and I'm just so pleased that he decided to take Joe on as a challenge. he's doing a whole lot better.
We're having the State North Carolina Black Leadership Caucus is having their first meeting ever in Mecklenburg County this Saturday. So,
tomorrow?
Yes, tomorrow at 10 o'clock. Greenpeace headquarters. So this is the first meeting I'm going to be able to get to since I think February, since I got sick. So I'm definitely going to be going there. I'm sorry, not this Saturday. It's the
27th. The 27th. I'm going to be in Scotland County at their convention.
That's right. I've got
to do that. I'm a keynote speaker, for goodness sakes.
So who's the keynote speaker?
I am. I'm going to be down. They asked me, my gosh. They asked me to be a keynote. I'd be all with bells on.
You mean the other person whose name we won't mention is not there anymore? Not around?
No. She's still rearing her ugly head so often. And of course, because Nancy Rory invites her here, there, and everywhere too.
We're back down there in Union County, sending out. I got emails when I was in Charleston trying to recuperate that Nancy Rory was holding meetings like she's the chair or something. What's that all about?
Well, you know, you can't stop somebody from holding a meeting. they can hold whatever meetings they want. And,
right.
you know, she wants to. If she wants to call herself the Queen of England, she can go ahead and call herself the Queen of England. But the bottom line is that she has the standing. You know, you can call yourself whatever you want to call yourself. It's a free country. But do
that's
you
true.
Have the authority, really? That, you know, that's a different story. And so, I mean, it doesn't bother me very much that she calls, like I said, she can call herself whatever she wants. you know.
Well, that's wonderful. I'm glad that's not bothering you. So that adds the reception was so bad down there. I was down there for 10 days, and I think all but 3 days was bright sun. And the reception, the thunderstorms, everything else was a mess. But,
oh, yeah.
I still lost track of what was going on. But what is scheduled for the state party? Because
the state executive council meeting is August the 17th.
17th. So
yeah, and that's going to be in Greensboro.
I'm on the SEC. That means I got to be there.
Yeah. You got to be there.
Are they? That's August 17th. Are they sending anything out?
Yes, they will. But you know how that goes. You'll get it 2 weeks before.
Okay, I just want to make sure I'm writing it down.
The agenda will be sent to you 3 seconds before.
I'm a Christian.
And by encrypted email. we're Democrats.
Take a little longer.
That's like a gold star in the NSA.
Oh, what is... Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to... I hate to bust in here with this, but I'm dying to know. So
uh-oh.
I have you on, Dr. Grace. I just have to ask two different questions.
Mm.
But you're our resident medical expert, and this stuff drives me nuts. But, you know, we're suffering right now under this wave of anti-abortion bills nationwide. Everywhere there's a they're just ramming through these horrific laws with, you know,
because you women don't know the hell you're doing. That's why.
And it's not just that, you know, they've figured out how to every trick in the book for closing clinics and, you know, making them unable to operate or be funded or whatever. But, you know, there are even these punitive ones with this, you know, let's force women against doctor's orders and their own desires to have, you know, ultrasounds and everything. It's just, it's getting unbelievable. And, I mean, despite a few victories like Senator Davis down in Texas, my hero, I'm starting to get a bit sad and distraught here. So how are we faring in this state as they keep ramming down every week? You know, our regressive Republicans here are bringing the 1860s back in full glory. So what's the standing here with North Carolina and our loss of freedoms?
Well, the standing is not good. And that's as honest and blunt as I can be. It is not good. What the Republicans have done is they've turned it back to about the 18th century. You're saying 19th, but I'm going a little one century farther back. So let's address the issue. And that's what we have to address the issues with the Republican Party, because we cannot get bogged down with the emotional part of it. And this is what I would encourage everyone and anyone to do, is to sit back and look at the issue and look at the situation at hand very coldly. Don't get emotional about it. And that's what I had to do about this whole abortion issue. I had to look at it very, very coldly and say, let me look at the facts. Okay, well, the same sort of thing happened in Texas, where the legislature defunded Planned Parenthood and defunded a whole bunch of abortion clinics. You know, and the same thing, trying to just eliminate abortion, the women's rights, basically. So what they found that within 3 or 4 years, what they found is that the small amount of money that it actually cost them, that they saved from defunding Planned Parenthood, went completely poof. because it was like $24 million or something like that that they defunded. Well, they found out in like 5 years that it cost the state 10 times that amount of money to care for the unborn children, I mean, for the care for the children that were born, and to,
right,
and to provide Medicare and Medicaid for them and WIC, et cetera, et cetera. So guess what? They put the funding back into to family planning. So what we've got to do is, again, be very, very cold about it, cold-hearted about it, because there will be people who will stand by the ideology of abortion being a murder, being a crime. You know, they will stand by that. So what we've got to do is hit them where it hurts, which is their pocketbook. And their pocketbook is, okay, this is what is going to happen. All right, you'll defund abortion, or you'll maybe not, it's not like you're defunding abortion, you're defunding the clinic. Because you can't defund abortion. Abortion's not being paid for by tax dollars anyway. The Hyde Amendment guarantees that. So you defund the clinic, which means that you limit a woman's access to an abortion if necessary, okay? That means that the child will be born. Now, if it's a child that is born with multiple medical problems, the cost of taking care of a child with medical problems is about 100 times more than what it would cost to have a little abortion.
Right.
And again, let's reiterate, abortion is not paid for by our tax dollars. It is absolutely not paid for by our tax dollars. But the Republicans would have you believe that indeed it is being paid for by our tax dollars. So we have to make sure that people understand that, again, in the cold light of day.
Yeah, and there'll be less money for tax breaks for the wealthy if we have to take care of all
this. Wouldn't that be? I know.
So, are you actually trying to tell this audience and me that they know that abortion isn't paid by our tax dollars?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Of course they do. They absolutely know it.
They know that, and they are still going to try to close something that is not controlled by any federal, state, or city agency.
Right, absolutely. So, they're going to defund Planned Parenthood, so now birth control is not going to be as available for our women and our men, let's face it. Not going to be available. That's number one. And number two, so that way more people will get pregnant because you defund Planned Parenthood, so less birth control, more people will get pregnant, and on top of that, there will be less availability for an abortion if the let's just say it's absolutely necessary. Let's say the child is deformed beyond belief. Let's say he's got more congenital defects than you could. He couldn't live more than 5 minutes outside of the womb. You're going to make this woman carry it to term?
Well,
go through labor and give birth.
They've
already passed anti-Sharia law, right? So it's over and done.
Oh yeah,
and they already
It is Sharia law. It is Sharia law. Exactly.
They even come anti-bill was the thing that was so
terrible. But what does Sharia law have to do with babies?
Yeah, so that's it's that's the irony of it. Yeah. We're passing some deep, anti-Sharia, chest-thumping, flag-waving, we hate the Taliban law, and then they Taliban the entire law of
exactly.
If I remember correctly, since it requires all the every abortion clinic law to become an ambulatory surgical center and doctors present everywhere and blah blah blah, didn't it effectively close every clinic in the state except for one?
Exactly.
We're going to become a state with one clinic, which I'm sure will be a massive target of protest and all these freaks with the banners and stuff. And they'll probably
I'm sure.
But that's all.
And not to mention the number of jobs that will be lost. Okay.
Right.
I mean, where's their jobs bill? Well, their jobs bill is that kill jobs. Let's take them away.
They're not worried worried about giving tax breaks to corporations and to wealthy people.
Well, but see, the problem, as I see it, is that they cannot legally or even morally have people.
They have no morals. They have no morals. So forget the last part. They cannot legally.
Cannot come to. They can't get people to come to their side of the aisle. So they have to create an entity that kills everything that we know it so we can start from scratch.
Yes. Yes. Anything that the Democrats are for, they're against.
Now, when in the 50s, when did the abortion become legal? It became legal when in the...
It was
in the 70s.
The reason why it was pushed to become legal was because not of the doctor's factor and not because of the health of the mother, but because they wanted to stop the birth of non-minorities. And I think this, they now see, has backfired on them because the non-minorities, they wanted to stop the birth of minorities. And the thing was that they thought that the non-minorities would catch up with the birth rate, but they liked the birth control also.
Right.
And now it's a fact that since the minorities did not and having more babies than they are, they now need to do something that will stop it.
Wow. Well, that's a horrifically eugenics thing.
Yes. I think...
Isn't it, though?
No, it wouldn't happen in America?
That's like something that would happen in North Germany. Not here.
Oh, not here?
Oh.
Hey.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, we don't do stuff like that.
I just want to put your fears aside.
Yes,
because
good.
You've been apprehensive about
yes.
it. But do you know that this law closing all the clinics and helping our women restrain themselves?
Yes, restrain themselves.
All those immoral activities?
Yes, yes.
The anti-Sharia law? They decided that didn't... cut it as a name.
Right.
So they renamed it the Family, Faith, and Freedom Protection Act of 2013.
Ooh.
Because who could vote against Family,
Faith,
and Freedom?
And Freedom.
Right?
Yes, that's true.
I'm reminded of the USA Patriot Act. Are you not a patriot? So if you hate family, faith, and freedom, please vote against this bill.
Now, the question I have for you, Dr. Galloway, is where do people go then if women go, not people, where do women go if they might die in having this child?
That's a very good question, because here's the answer. The answer is that is kind of like a toss-up. We don't know. Because since they refused to accept Medicaid, the Medicaid assistance from the feds, since they are cutting back on Medicaid and they're making it tougher for a person to qualify for Medicaid, there's absolutely, it used to be if you're pregnant, you got Medicaid. I'm not convinced anymore. There's no guarantee anymore that if you're pregnant, you will get Medicaid. I'm just not convinced. So if a woman does happen to have a child that a woman happens to be in a position where she could possibly die from childbirth, she's SOL. I hate to say that, but she is SOL. And that is the cruelest and harshest. That's why my hair is I'm standing up in the back of my neck, and why I am so angry.
Well,
I
don't know. Is it permissible to say she's screwed?
Well,
in a nutshell,
they don't care about the living. They can go ahead and get rid of them.
But the problem is they don't care about these people that are going to be born.
But look, they don't.
They only care about them being born.
Yes, just as long as they get born.
Right.
After that, you're fine and start, and then it's your fault. But look, we've already seen it in Texas, for instance. They said all around the Mexican border.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's a big boom in they're already getting ready for abortion clinics or they'll use everything. They were saying already in Kansas and Ohio on the borders and stuff of those states, they were already seeing an increase in the manufacture and sale of all these kinds of, you know, over-the-counter abortion products and remedies, if you will. But that's what's going to happen here. I mean, you know, you think that all these meth labs and stuff looking around out in Appalachia aren't going to, you know, these pills and different things are going to, they're going to be used one way or the other. Either you do it legally and safely, or it's going to go back to the nightmare of back alley, you know, trailer park horror shows, and we're going to hurt and endanger a lot of people.
Well, but you'll be
that is exactly what's going to happen. And hey, well, listen, before we put carry on,
yeah.
There was a moment there that I thought somebody had a washing machine on. I mean, I could barely hear what anybody was saying. So who's doing dishes, man?
We're getting a lot of interference from somewhere, I don't know, because we can't hear on this side.
No, that's why I'm listening.
That was the NSA.
You're there?
That was the NSA.
The NSA.
Yeah,
all right, as long as I know. As long as I know.
Yeah.
I'm cool with that.
The comments, and, I mean, that's the truth, is it not, that we're going to return to like a 1940s style.
The back alley.
Yeah. It's a nightmare.
The back alley, the coat hangers.
And the thing is, that it makes me furious about the Republicans with their love of the wealthy, is that, you know, the wealthy have the same problems that the poor do. And just because you're wealthy doesn't mean that, you know, your daughter doesn't go get pregnant and all that stuff. They just simply have the ability to, you know, make little Tiffany disappear for a season and go to a ski resort or Aunt Myra's or something and then come back and the poor not. And it just infuriates me how the little games they play that it, you know, this affects all women and all families across the world, everywhere. And all you're doing is threatening health. You're not helping anyone.
Right. You're not helping anyone. So, who besides, let's see, our majority leader Hall is up there that's really going into facing these people and giving them what to?
Here's the thing. Our legislature, the Democrats, really are functioning with both hands tied behind their backs. And it's not their fault. They're doing everything that they can. But the Republicans have been in such a bad bind. We have to get the vote out next year. We've got to take one of the houses back. I mean, that's it in a nutshell. For everyone, and I met Democrats, who told me they voted for Pat McCrory, and I just about spat. You know, how could you do that? Well, we thought he was a nice guy. All right.
But
Mr. Moderate
guy, for years, they didn't think he was a nice guy. So how did that change? What did he say that changed?
No, he's never changed. He's not a nice guy. He has never changed. This is who Pat McCrory is. Pat McCrory is an opportunist. Pat McCrory will do whatever is most expedient for Pat McCrory. If people don't get it, they need to get it. I hope they get it now. You know, my neighbor, who's a Republican, said that to me the other day. She said, I am so sorry that I voted for McCrory. And she said, I never thought that I would live to see the day when I would say that Bev Perdue looked good. But Bev Perdue looks good. And she's a strong, strong Republican. She said that. So I was very, very encouraged, and I am encouraged with we have to ride this wave. We have to ride the momentum is on our side. People will see, and people do see, that the Democrats are not always right. I'm not saying that we're always right and with, you know, a superior group or anything like that. What I am saying is that Democrats have a heart. We care about other people. We care about our fellow man, and we care about children, and you know that old country song. Either one of you heard it? Old Dogs, Children, and Watermelon Wine. That's a great song. It's a great song. It's about an old black man who was in taking stock of his life, realized that the three things that were most important to him were old dogs, children, and watermelon wine. And I kind of took that and I said, you know, old dogs, well, yeah, us veterans, you know, people like that, our old people, our family, that's very important. So I equated old dogs with the family and with veterans, the veterans of America. Okay, and children, well, there's nothing to say about children. Children are children. And watermelon wine, that's an old-timey kind of an old-fashioned traditional thing. So our traditions are also very important. That's what Democrats stand for. We stand up for old dogs, children, and watermelon wine. That's what we stand up for. And if nobody in this whole world gets it, and if no one ever got it, they get it now. They get it now.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing
about
Democrats, like you said, not always right, but we try, by using our compassion, we try to always make the world a better place and to expand people's rights and freedoms. And the other party seems to do the exact opposite. They want to contract everyone's rights and freedoms and do nothing but exploit the world for profit.
Right now we're joining into our conversation. We have the chair of the Democratic Party, Mr. Rand.
How are you doing?
Chairman, how are you?
I'm great. I'm down in New Hanover County visiting Democrats and trying to spread the good word. I've been listening to you chat for the last 15 minutes.
Good. And I'm glad you've had the chance to come on with us because this abortion and voting rights act that these maniacs are the only words that I think about that come to mind. The people are not going to realize until it starts hitting them in the face what has been done by not voting in this state in 2010.
I agree. I don't think the people have – it's a bitter crop that they're unfortunately that we're reaping, and I'm not sure yet that they have realized just how damaging it is, but we are slowly realizing it.
The thing that really gets me is that this Duke Power graduate, I should say Duke Energy graduate that we have now as governor, we fought against him for years getting this job. And I mean, do people think that we were just stupid or this was just something that we wanted, that we didn't want him in there? This is the reason, because he will bend with the wind and go with any straw that flies in the air. And when you put Art Pope in as his spokesperson and money manager, this is what you get.
Now, do you think the governor is actually Pat Pope or is it Art McCrory?
I love it.
I mean, who is it?
I would say that.
Who is this masked man?
I was just calling the Duke because behind the whoever is standing there is the Goliath in the room is Duke Power.
Absolutely. You know, it's just unbelievable. You know, and the thing is that so many times we were telling these people. I said, how about Tapatory? Hell no. We were glad to get rid of him as a daggone mayor down here. I mean,
we're going to have increased sales tax. The fuel tax is going up unbelievably in this state.
And if you went out and bought a new a hybrid car, you're going to be taxed with trying to help the economy and clean the air. What goes here? And it's just like this. Let me let you hear this for a minute.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The shadow knows.
The shadow knows. Funny.
I mean, who knows? I mean, anything could come up. It seems like anything that goes into their mind comes out in a pill, as long as our coach is right.
Well, that's the thing. Half these bills that they're putting out is that they're already written by these conservative think tanks. They're not even from Perry or his ponies or anything else. They're actually all written.
Right. So, Mr. Chairman, what? How is your plan that I know you had in getting this party back in the flow for this next upcoming vote in 14. How does that seem to be going?
Well, I think the first order of business is that people have, as I've said before, have to recognize that we are a minority party. We cannot be in a defensive stance. We have to be in an offensive stance, and we have to take the fight to our opponents. And that means we have to singularly recognize that even though we may have some differences with each other, our true opponent is in the General Assembly and occupying the governor's mansion, and that's our ideological opponent that is running essentially a plan that is changing and making over the state in a way that actually most citizens do not like.
And that includes most Republican citizens.
Yeah.
Yes. Look, all of us on this phone call live in this state because we love North Carolina and we want to raise our family here, enjoy the quality of life here. If you're destroying the brand of this state so that our investment in our homes and our businesses and our education is actually is becoming diluted and going down, they are not doing their jobs as stewards of our state.
Right.
Their job is to be a deliberative body when they're acting in the General Assembly, not to come in there and create what I would call, you know, legislative gumbo or go in there and create so many bills so quickly that nobody has any idea what's in the bills. It's like legislative blender. I mean, you ask them, do you know what's in the bill? Ask your legislator if they've read it.
Well, it's also just creating a division because there's no actual legislating going on. They're coming in and just ramming things through.
But you see now, you know, well, we can all say that because we're here all Democrats and we think that there is we don't like the way they govern. I mean, something like, well, you know, we could do things better if you gave us a chance, but you know, you have to give us a chance, and so now we're giving them a chance, and it seems like they don't care anything about what people think. I mean, they just like when the governor of Florida met with the people yesterday that were occupying his offices in the complex of the governor's manor. He said, yes, I listened to you, but I like what we did. I like to stand my ground. Thank you. Goodbye. So they can't say I didn't meet with you. Well, you know, the thing is here, what do these people actually want? Do they want North Carolina to be just like Texas, where over 65% of the jobs are what do you call, a minimum wage and not full-time, part-time jobs? I mean, is that what they want? Because more money could be directed to them? It really is incredible when they're sitting there writing all the law, the school books, well, not all, but about 75% of the school books that are used in this country, and the country is saying, no, we don't want their books because their books are slanted, what do they want this state to become? And I believe it's the last throes of a dying party, a dying minority party. And I think this is just bitterness. This now is just bitterness because they can see the handwriting on the wall. They know there's nothing they can do to stem it. We're going to stick out like the Alamo as long as we can. Davy Crockett swinging his rifle, according to the Disney story, to the end. And now we don't care what happens after we're dead.
So, I have a question for you.
Yes.
When you use the expression, the handwriting on the wall, you know that's from the handwriting in the Old Testament from when Nebuchadnezzar sees the writing of Yahweh.
Yes.
And, of course, when it's loosely translated, mean you have been weighed and found wanting. I wonder if they've read the handwriting on the wall.
Well, subliminally, they have.
Okay, so the handwriting is basically saying that their policies don't work. I was on a television interview earlier today. I'm down in Wilmington, and they asked me about, well, I said the Republicans have been in office since 2011, and they have not really created jobs. In fact, we're losing jobs, and I went through a lot of metrics, including in the triangle, venture capital for this month was down, which is all a direct relation to their social engineering programs. My host said, well, you know, they've only been in office for a couple years. Give them a chance. And I said, I have been giving them a chance. George W. Bush looked straight in the eye of Ronald Reagan in 1980 and called this stuff voodoo economics. We've been giving it a chance for 33 years. How much more of a chance do you need to give it?
Right.
It doesn't work.
That's that wonderful ad that Raymond Sharpton had on the other day when he was talking about it. He said, we've been doing the trickle-down for 30 years, but so far we only get the down.
The down. We don't get the trickle.
Where's the benefit?
But the thing is, though, I think voodoo economics would work better than what these guys are doing. And these voodoo economics had an up and a down. This doesn't have an up. It just has a down.
Well, I think that Chairman Vola put it very, very well. Very, you know, we have to keep reminding people that we have been giving this form of economics a chance for 33 years. And I don't know about anybody else, but I remember the Ronald Reagan years. I remember double-digit inflation. I remember my senior patients having to live off cat food. I remember these things. You know, remember PhDs standing in line to try to get a job at McDonald's. So I remember all these sorts of things, and I remember being so grateful that I had the job that I had.
Yeah.
I'd also like to say, Michael, that what your other guest alluded to, trickle-down, and you did too, actually, what I see them doing is something I call trickle up. They're hoovering up every last bit of wealth from the bottom 50. So there is no trickle down. It's vacuuming it all up to the 0.1%. I mean, this has been an ongoing policy since the late 70s, and you can see it out in our communities. And we have what you started down the pathway with is very wise. Look, Pat McCrory. Look every Republican and Democrat, too, right in the eye and say, tell me, how does your platform, what are your ideas, how are they going to formulate and create a future for us? What is your vision? I have never actually gotten the vision statement from Pope, McCrory, or Berger, or Tillis. They will not tell you how their policies are going to play out over the next 10, 15, 20, 25, 30 years. Why? Because it's devastation.
Right.
They won't own it.
Right.
Absolutely.
One thing that the House Minority Leader the other day, Larry Hall, said about the tax plan that they just ran through. He was giving tax breaks to all of the out-of-state corporations and millionaires, and they're balancing it on the backs of the working families of North Carolina.
Right.
And I think that's the absolute truth. They keep, just like you're saying, vacuuming it up. You're every time they're, you know, you look at the long term is only budget deficit and programs and funding and security. And the only way to sustain it is by continuing to crush and pulverize and take the extract the wealth from the poor.
Yeah. I actually agree with that. And now, women, Mr. Chairman, how many women, or maybe you know this, Dr. Grace, how many women do we have in the House and Senate in North Carolina?
Off the top of my head, I could not tell you exactly how many women we have, but women are underrepresented at every level of our democracy, starting in the U.S. Senate. I can tell you that. I mean,
well,
I think women make up about 54% of the electorate by voting numbers, give or take a few. But they nowhere near represent that in terms of elected office. And that is a problem. I mean, just go look at the Senate in the state.
Well, the thing is that I want to say is, where are the women screaming about what is going on with abortion in Texas and in North Carolina? I mean,
I saw a bunch
Moral
of them
Mondays,
screaming up there in Raleigh.
In Moral Mondays, yeah, they're there.
I saw them.
Yeah.
I saw lots of women on Tuesday, that first Tuesday when that bill came out in the Senate. I mean, people are activated.
I'm talking about elected women to
elect
office.
Well, we're finally getting the picture. I have to say this. We're finally getting the picture, okay, that women are more electable, really, than men are. Because if you look at the last election, the only person, the women who are incumbent to ran for office kept their seats. And, you know, and the only person that came even close was Linda Coleman. And Danny Watson was very, very close. So we're getting, you know, we're finally getting the picture. And so women are working very closely with Lillian's List and Emily's List to find and groom good women candidates, female candidates. And that's good. That's as it should be. You guys have messed it up long enough. Time for the women. So, yes.
I mean, look, his question is, where are the women? I mean, Senator Parman out of Winston-Salem has been there nearly every Moral Monday in the jails, you know, greeting people coming out, and is real strong on the social agenda, and so have a number of other people. But one of the problems that minorities and women have running for office is that these offices take a tremendous amount of time and money being the key. And I have been an advocate for getting the money out and going towards some form of public financing to allow to level the playing field and let the best ideas win. We've yet to accomplish that. So even when women do get elected, they're beholden to money interests. I mean, the problem in the political parties is the money.
Yes.
Bottom line, the money basically puts a manacle on people and enslaves them and puts duct tape over their mouths, metaphorically, because people aren't willing to practice free speech and lead if they're worried about offending somebody that they need to finance the campaigns, and that is not right.
Well, no, you're absolutely correct. And what happens is that in all the ones that I'm familiar with here in North Carolina, and it's probably in a lot of other places too, but I'm only talking about North Carolina now, is that most of the elected officials are not beholden to their party. They run by themselves. And when you let elected officials run nilly-willy by themselves, this is what we get. We get nilly-willy elected officials with half a brain. And you see, the thing is, I don't believe the parties on the precinct level are strong enough to demand the best people to run in their areas. And one of the things that I'd like to take that I took back when I was take from New York, that when we had precincts, but we also had clubs. Like, I belonged to the Frederick Douglass Democratic Club, and that was not just one precinct. That was maybe all the precincts in my particular voting block. And as the elected official who ran in our community, in our district, he had to make sure that he was at our monthly meeting telling us what he did that month. And if he missed more than one or two and didn't send a representative to tell us what was going on, his butt was grass the next election time. So we don't hold elected officials to the fire, their feet to the fire. We let them run anything they want and run over us. They'll tell us anything, and then we don't see them again for another 2 years. And I think we need
to
stop.
That's a reflection of the money issue, Michael. It's a reflection of the traditions of the region that we live in. And it's a reflection of a growing problem, a perception problem. So you know, in churches or organizations, people are always trying to recruit new members, and they forget about the flock, okay?
That's
so you'll often hear people talk about who we have to bring into the party, or we have to go to this mystical middle ground, which is actually a fallacious idea, the unaffiliate voters. I was an unaffiliate for 18 years. I was elected as an independent when I first ran as mayor, but I was very progressive. Unaffiliates already have a political lean. They choose to be unaffiliated for a variety of reasons, but the misread is that they are the moderate middle, which is not true. I know plenty of unaffiliates that are Tea Party members and plenty of them that are Green Party members.
Yes,
okay?
Absolutely.
It's absolutely totally wrong to claim that that's actually this middle group. It's not.
I every time someone tells me that I'm unaffiliated, I said, yeah, you don't live on this planet. Please don't tell me unaffiliate. You are leaning in some direction. You don't straddle the fence. There's got to be a direction.
And so what happens in political parties with elected officials is that instead of being beholden to the ideas and the ideals and the platform that we run on, they become obsessed with this kind of cult of personality where people give money to the candidate because they want access and a relationship with the candidate, and they forget that the candidate is supposed to be plugged into something greater than the candidate. Chiefly, our value system.
Right.
That's the challenge I have as chair, to try to reconfigure this, and Grace is my eighth congressional district chair, is to get people to see this in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, but, you know, we can get all the people in the precincts and the congressional districts to think this way, but we got to make sure we get the candidate that thinks this way.
There's a way to do it. The way is that we all unite, and when we meet our elected officials, we make them know and let them know in no uncertain terms, this is how we would like our state and country to be, and these are our values.
Mm-hmm.
We have to hold them accountable to the platform.
Yeah.
And accountable to what we believe in. I mean, for instance, my troubles as party chair started when I went and backed Representative Kelly Alexander, I think Representative Pricey Harrison, introduced the bill to legalize medical marijuana, and it might have even had industrial hemp in there, which is something I favor. I spoke for 20 seconds at the General Assembly. I got a lot of grief about it, even though our platform by the SEC has passed that.
Yeah.
Right.
And 18 other states have gone that direction. District Columbia is number 19. We are a tobacco state that is, you know, shedding jobs in the rural areas. It makes perfect sense for us to actually join on and do something modern and make money for our people. But no, people were afraid that, you know, there was a fear factor that I spoke about it, that somehow I was off message. I said to people, have you looked at the polling numbers? 67% of the unaffiliates are with me. 62% of Obama voters, 48% of Republicans, 58% of North Carolinians, this is a winning issue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the fear got in the water.
Yeah, yeah.
You see, I can give you a couple other issues like that, you know, folks get afraid to talk about, but they need to talk about.
Right.
They need to defend what we stand for. Don't you think so, Grace?
Oh, completely. You know, what you're saying is absolutely music to my ears. Absolutely, absolutely. Because, you know, I'm tired of being led down the garden path, if you will, by people that claim to be you know, progressive Democrats, and then they proceed to do precisely what they choose to do, and they start veering to the right. And that's not what we stand for. I'm not saying that we are okay. Being a liberal is a wonderful thing. Liberal is not a bad word. Neither is progressive a bad word. But the Republicans and the right wing has managed to make the word liberal into a bad four-letter word. Of course, they can't spell, and that's the reason why they think it's a four-letter word. But
Grace, I know why they feel that way, because the neoliberal economic policies that they ram down our throats don't work. You see, they don't even understand the basis of their own policies.
Neoliberal, wow, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Is that like neo-communist,
No, it's essentially, if you look at what we've been doing since Bretton Woods in 1944, we've been running with the IMF. We've been running these programs since, we got control after World War II. You know, we need to look at other forms, other economic systems that work within the free market and get away from crony capitalism and corruption.
Right.
You know, the right wing talks about the free markets, but they don't actually support them. They are just as tied into crony capitalism and supporting the military prison industrial complex, which is not free at all. Costs a lot of money.
Yes, indeed.
Now, see, I have waited, Randy, through four chairmanships for someone like you to emerge. Really. We've not had someone as articulate as you are, and we've not had someone as progressive as you are. And Michael, how long, Michael?
Yes, yeah,
it's been a goodly long time. It really has been.
Well, I appreciate that, Grace. I actually have to go. My appointment is here in Wilmington, and so I appreciate the chance to talk to you. I would love to see you when I come down to Mecklenburg, Michael. Grace.
Yeah.
Are you going to be there on Monday? Are you going to be up at Morrow Monday, Randy?
I'll be at Morrow Monday. Why don't you come and chat with me?
I am going to be up there because managing director and general counsel for the Advancement Project, Reverend Hales, will be up there also. So I think I got to talk to my wife and see if I can just drive up there Sunday night. So I'll be up there because I can't take the ride up and back before. That's too much of a ride for me.
Why don't you call me when you get into town and let's get together?
Okay. All right. That works for me.
Grace, Dr. Galloway, as usual, it's wonderful. And our other guest or host, thank you very much.
Well, thank
you're
you. Thank you.
Kind.
And keep up the good work, please.
Thank
absolutely.
You. And we'll chat next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you. The chairman of the party, Democratic right. Party, North Carolina, Randy Bowler.
But really, honestly, Michael, how long has it been that we've waited for a voice like that? How long has it been? Jerry Meek certainly wasn't that. Jerry Meek was an attorney, and he spoke legalese. David Parker, David Young, was a nice guy. I mean, but he did nothing. But David Parker was an attorney, and no one could understand what he said. I could never understand a thing because he talked in circles.
Are you telling me, are you saying that David Young was a nice guy? No, I don't think so.
He was a nice guy. But because he didn't want to offend anybody. He was a nice guy. Was he effective? He wasn't effective. I'm not saying he was, because he's nice, he was effective. He wasn't. Not by a long bag, I'm sure. You know? You got the ha-ha button.
Okay. Hell yeah. A doctor here, I get to ask for more advice in the medical field.
Oh, so you mean you don't have Obamacare?
I just want to know. She is an expert. This is bothering me. Oh, by the way, Mike, I meant to say, I looked it up just for other conversation. the percentage of women in the legislature is there are 8 in the Senate, 31 in the House. That equals 22.9% of our legislature is female.
We got to do something about that, Grace. We got to do something about that.
We do have to do something about that, particularly since people like Ruth Samuelson and Shafley, whatever the woman's name is, those Republican women, they need to hand in their union card that belong, you know, they need to turn in their ticket that says they belong to the feminine female gender, because they're an embarrassment. They're an absolute embarrassment.
I would say some other things, but this is a family.
Yeah. It's a family show.
Yeah. I'll wait till you leave the air. Then I'll say it.
Family show. Yeah. A point about another nice guy. So you may have heard of this race that's going on in Virginia.
A race?
They have a funny little thing going on called, corruption. And so the governor's in real trouble. So the lieutenant, Mr.
Yes.
But I wanted to, he made some additional headlines this week because he's been in trouble because he's tied in with all of the money laundering scandal with the government. But,
no, really? I'm shocked.
He came out with a on his website, launching his candidacy. He came out with a thing that he's going to pass a law in Virginia to ban oral and anal sex.
Oh, for goodness' sake!
He wants to ban it, and this is why he said he is the defender of children in the state. And he is going to keep kids safe because that's where sexual predators come from. And if you didn't have that, you wouldn't have sexual predators. So he is pushing.
There's so much to do for the people. Creating jobs. There's so much to do to keep our air clean, our water clean, to take pollutants out of our food, to shore and he wants to get in my bedroom. I tell you what, he's not allowed. My husband won't have it.
Yeah. Listen, if this is a stay your ground state, you're going to be shot coming into the bedroom.
That's right.
I mean, and again, and it's like just like the other legislature when they over here in our state where they close all the clinics and everything else and say that they're defending freedom and family. This guy has changed. He said it's an old law that they used to have called the Crimes Against Nature Act that he wants to reinstate. And basically, it was an anti-homosexual, all this kind of law.
Mm.
But it's to ban anal and oral sex, and he is renaming it the Anti-Child Predator Law.
Ooh.
So vote
oh, God. I'll tell you what's a real crime against nature, and we can turn this on its head. Let me tell you what's a crime against nature. What the crime against nature is when you pump pollutants into our water and contaminate it so that the fish die. And either they die or they're glowing in the dark. And if we eat it, we become more susceptible to cancer. I'll tell you what's a crime against nature. What's crime against nature is when you pump pollutants into the air to the point where, people with even the slightest form of asthma cannot go outside on certain days because it's too darn hot and they would gasp and they would not be able to breathe. I'll tell you what's a crime against nature is when we call an act the Clean Air Act when actually it does nothing but allow factories and businesses to continue to pollute. Those are real crimes against nature.
Yes. Absolutely.
And
so, I don't understand why these Republicans, everywhere they go in every state, instead of doing anything for job growth or do anything to clean up the environment, you know, aren't we supposed to be stewards of the earth, all this stuff. Any of the anything, everywhere they go, all they are obsessed with is sex.
Mm-hmm.
What,
yeah,
what?
It's because
it's
sexually repressed. I really honestly think that every Republican in the world is sexually repressed. I really, really do.
That's
totally correct.
Oh my God, my.
That's
hey,
what
what
it is.
What was that other one? That other Republican that came out with
the,
he said that
all
gays are
going to
lead to man dog sex.
Yeah, man dog sex.
Have,
I love it. These
God,
people are completely, completely.
Talk about the mic.
This is just it. That's what it is.
Hey, we're going to have to go. You love to play your stuff, so maybe you got to go find the music for Caligula.
That's right. I mean, I'm going to get that. I mean, you know, hey. There is, why are we spending all this time trying to prevent people from having sex if we are not completely afraid of sex?
Well, I think they're all closet gay. They really are. They need to all come out the closet. You know,
they
would feel so much better for it.
Yes.
White
pants. White pants. That's what the white pants.
White pants, yeah, exactly. It's the white pants.
Yeah. So the white pants was first. It's frightening, right?
Look, the part that pisses me all laughing aside, he's the front runner. He's the one that is going to become the governor unless some miracle occurs and we can get a Democrat in there. But, again, these people, all laughing aside, are passing laws every day, restricting all of our lives.
Well,
doing things like this. And this doesn't get him, like, instantly kicked out of office. It's just another day. It's just like,
Well, you remember what Representative Trent Frank said about...
friends on the left side of the aisle here try to make rape and incest the subject because the incidence of rape and resulting in pregnancy are very low. But
so, I mean, they try to say blame it on us when they're the ones that are bringing it up.
Yeah,
constantly. They, but yet they don't want daggone drones. They don't want the NSA snooping on you. Oh, but they're only saying that because they're going to have the NSA snoop on you in your bedroom. That light socket is going to be a little camera if they have something to do with it, because that's where we need it. We don't need it at the nuclear weapons sites. We don't need it at the over the NSA agent's head when he's on the computer. We need it in the bedroom because that's where all the big business is done. That's where all the spying is done. See, they're not really telling us that. You see, they're not saying that the spies are created in the bedroom. And those spies that do anal and oral sex, they're the ones. That's all. It's simple. I mean, you should understand that. I mean, it's clear as the anything. So Grace, now, what do they do if you have a clinic? You're in a clinic someplace, I don't know, Union County. You're in one of the medical clinics with the group that's there. You have maybe, you saw 1,500 people that day, and one of the women says, I'm pregnant. What can I do? And this law is passed. What do you have a choice of doing, or what can you do?
Well, there's two main the question then next arises. I kind of look at and this has happened. I look at the woman, and I say, you have two choices. You know, the one choice is if you're pregnant, you will qualify for Medicaid right away. So I give her the address of DSS, and I say, go on down there, you need to apply for Medicaid so you can have a happy, healthy baby. Now, depending on her response, because that response will tell me whether I need to give her the alternate methods or not. Okay, I don't say immediately, oh, here, here's the number for to have an abortion. No, my first and immediate response, as with most providers, I think all providers, is, okay, if you do you have insurance? Well, you don't have insurance, you qualify for Medicaid. Let me give you the number of DSS and go get Medicaid so that you can have prenatal care and have a healthy baby. Yeah, okay, that's what we would do. Now, if she says, I don't want this baby, okay, where can I go? At that point in time, then I would say, well, here are your choices. All right? And I would give her the choices. Yeah, again, the key word, choices.
Right.
Give her choices.
Now,
not my
in this bill that they have in front of the legislature right now, it's not passed yet, but what does it do if a doctor does this in his office?
Oh, he can, how about get prosecuted? They got to make it against the law.
Okay.
That's what they
want
to do.
They haven't put that in the bill yet. Or
no.
What, he's going to get 2 years to life or something.
Well,
that's,
you know, right now you offer the woman the choices. The problem is that we're most of us are so paranoid because we don't know who's a plant and who's not a plant.
That's correct. Right.
You know.
But I always err on the side.
Go ahead.
Right. I suppose it's a plant, and the doctor says, "Okay, I'll do it here in my office." And it's a plan. Okay. Do they come in, put handcuffs on you, take you out, perk walk you out to the side, into the car? Okay. Now you're in front of the and the judge says 15 years of life? Or what is it? What?
Attempted murder. Attempted murder. That's what they're going to make it into. Attempted murder. Yeah.
That is not murder because it was a plan. So it would be attempted murder, correct? Okay, suppose it's a real, right, okay, suppose it's a real person that wants it, and the doctor does it, and someone finds out, is he, the same thing, he's charged now with murder, but is the woman charged with murder?
Could be also, absolutely. Mm. I mean, that's how sick it is. Beyond, they're trying to make late-term abortions into, you know, considered illegal.
They now want to make it 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I heard today, 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, and besides, even if you leave one, even, I mean, you know they're going to close it down, too, some way. They'll find another way to close it down, but they've got the one thing. We're talking about statewide. These people afford to drive across the entire state, and they're going to have to go for multiple.
Well, okay, so what happens to the people that can't afford to do that?
They can?
Yeah.
Well, then they may be able to take care of it.
Okay, but murder is murder no matter where you commit it. I don't know that there's a – oh, don't worry. I'll kill this guy because he lives in Chicago, but I live in North Carolina. I am not charged with murder. Murder is murder. This is a state law.
Well, Michael,
so
you got a point. You got a point. The definition of murder should be the same across the board internationally. Sure, absolutely. And this is where, here we go. Rubber hits the road. The rubber meets the road. So that's why there's so many problems with this law. So very many problems with this. This bill.
Okay, so it's a state crime then, but if the federal government would get involved, if this doctor left the state and did it across the state line multiple times, it might be a federal law, federal offense.
Because abortion is still legal.
Okay.
It is illegal.
But you see, so therefore, it can never be a federal offense. It can only be that state's offense. So,
right.
But the
for Ms., though, how does the state look at you when you just committed, or just committed, but just had three abortions across the state? And because it's not going to, they're not going to be able to stop a doctor to get affiliated with a hospital in another state. As long as the doctor took the boards, right, passed the test, or what does it do? Credentials have to be accepted?
Well, yeah, here we go. Again, these are the problems. These are the problems with these sort of bills that are being passed in these in states like North Carolina and Texas. Mm-hmm. And they're not only unconscionable, they're just plain stupid.
Yeah.
They're bills being proposed by stupid people.
Okay. So let me just also point this out, though, that this shows you the their intention is to get it in no matter what. They don't care
mm-hmm.
about medicine
mm-hmm.
or the law or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And one example
right.
was back on July 10th, it was reported that when the Sharia law bill was being threatened with court action, and McCrory had to come out, and he said that they need to change portions of it or he would have to veto it because of all the anti-abortion stuff. It said that the legislature went back in and took a motorcycle safety bill
yes.
and put the identical language word for word into it because he was already signing it. And they didn't even have to change it. And the person on the board said they didn't even know until they were just told.
So it was like 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah, 11 o'clock at night. But they did it so that it got through somewhere, anywhere, in every type of bill.
Yeah.
Because they just carbon copy it into all these other bills that don't even have anything to do with it. So that's their intention, is to get it in. It doesn't matter to them if it's legal or not.
No, it doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't. They just want it passed. They just want it passed because they want to appease their Tea Party. They want their base. They're terrified of being primaried. That's what it is. They're just scared to death of being primaried. And I wish they would get primaried because, you know what, I think it's, oh, my gosh.
I think they would get primaried because the Tea Party person would not win.
Well, I understand that one of our county commissioners in Cabarrus County, Chris Miesma, is thinking of primarying Richard Hudson. That would be good. I would like to see that.
Oh, that'd be fine. That'd be nice.
Yeah.
That would be fun. Except Chris Miesma's an idiot. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I could get sued for that, couldn't I? As my personal opinion is that Chris Miesma.
he's not all one light bulb short of a dozen.
He's non-compartmentalist.
Recap, the one thing that you've said that's very important today is that we just need to get real and we need to focus on the facts and we need to pull them out at every moment. We need to bring the truth up because, they get with doing things like, let's put abortion in a motorcycle safety bill and nobody would notice. But we need to bring up the truth and point out the facts and we'll
every
end
time.
Up re- And we'll win because no one in their right mind wants any of this crap that they keep pushing. But they're doing it to satisfy, their narrow, 1% rabid base that is going to provide money like the Koch brothers. But the actual public doesn't support it.
Well,
pointing out what they're doing behind the scenes or else it's going to continue.
And my final thing on it is that this reminds me of Elysium. Yeah. Elysium, where all the people like Art Polk and the Mitt Romneys go. They take everything. It's a place not on Earth, but in a huge space station that's created another planet. And they go up there and they leave all the garbage behind them. It's like, when you eat a Whopper and you throw it on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
That's what these people want to do. They want to create a state where only they want to live.
Right.
And just like in Detroit, they have done that on purpose purposely destroyed Detroit. So all the people that they do not want there will leave, and they can rebuild it.
Well, it sounds like the Katrina plan.
Right. Okay. And Elysium is a new film coming out with Matt Damon.
Right, yeah. I saw that.
So, and that's what they do. The rich and the wealthy and the enablers, the entitled, go and live
in Elysium.
They live
in their little paradise.
They live in their little paradise.
They live in the garbage dump.
And everybody else, just lives in their own little world. Where it's our present day Republican Teabag Party, a small group of holier than thou that live in Elysium and share some of the same mindset parameters that the art folks and the ultra conservative Tea Party does today.
So it's kind of like the ultimate gated community.
They are, yes, right. The ultimate gated community where they would never have to shoot Trayvon Martin, because he would never do that. He wouldn't be.
Well, Michael, I have to run. I have to go. It's been a pleasure.
And kiss Mr. Galloway.
I'll do that. That was gleefully, happily, we'll do that.
Okay. I thought you would. You're not kidding anybody.
make sure that it's not in Virginia. We might outlaw something.
That's right. No kissing.
Right.
Or above the ridges. All right. We will.
All right, Michael.
Next week, dear. Thank you.
Right. Bye.
Bye-bye. And
scary world.
It's a scary world. But, you know.
But I have something
I think.
Posted on your.
I think it's. I think it's a three-ring circus.
This will make you feel better. Leave that in.
Oh, yeah, that's good. I've seen that before.
Bring it up,
The whistle blows at the end of our show today, and we had a full, fun-packed show today. And all you people out there thinking that you're safe, you're not safe as long as our folks are around. Well, you know, the two brothers of the Three Ring Circus, it's the Art Pope and the Templet. You'll see us. Vivian, FBI, Senator Rivers is up there now. We found them in the money box. But Pope, that's the Three Ring Circus. Art Pope and the Pope.
Running those
Running those packs. Yep. And McDonald's down in Virginia. Seems over 125 pounds down. Plus priceless gifts for the wedding from this guy claiming that off your face. It's just corrupt. But that's all right. It's their corruption. And in Elysium, everything is fine. That's right. Okay, guys. We're going. Have a great day, ladies and gentlemen. And watch today.
Let's go on the bigger. But in life he's just a clown, till they bring the curtain down. Life is a three-ring circus, all of the ups and downs of a carousel that I know so well. that the clown is real.